Steve, thanks. Hi, it's Bill and Wendy. This should be a fun show, don't you think?
Why, because it's Friday?
Well, a lot of it because it's Friday, and also a visit from our friend Dave Ennett, a fixture on the Steve Cochran Show, but
for
sometimes...
Now.
For now is right. We're doing it.
I'm listening.
Dave, we're doing everything we can behind the scenes to make this a reality. We want you.
Won't take that much.
I think Steve takes you... I got to say this. I think he takes Careful. You for granted a little bit, don't you?
No, I just can't argue
bit,
with
just
you.
A little bit, yeah.
So, wow.
I'm a guest. I'm a guest on your show. I wouldn't argue with you.
Right.
Oh, I see. He's very politically correct.
Yes, mm-hmm. yes.
And all the other shows have so many helpers and staff, and we have you and me and Kevin.
That's it. Three-person operation.
Well, that hurts a little bit.
Well, but Steve.
Whoa.
No.
Steve, you have your own show. You're considered having your own show.
And it has six of his own shows.
Okay, good point.
There is a segment you've been doing on Steve's show for a couple of years now, and it's a fan favorite. Everybody loves it. It's the Hawkopedia. There wasn't time somehow to do it on their show today, but you'll do it with us,
right? I got bumped
by
Dr. Sam, the vet.
I know. That's not right.
And what was his final advice?
Hawks win. That was his final advice.
You would think on this, it's game two with the Blackhawks and the St. Louis Blues. They would find time for the Hawkopedia, you would think.
You would hope.
But I'm wearing my joysy.
Yeah.
Because Duncan Keith returns tonight.
That's a little foreshadowing there.
Yep. Yep.
Some what is
inside,
it, a surprise?
We have inside information.
No, this is about the Hawkopedia.
Oh.
I love it. Shall we get right to it?
Radio 720 WGN.
Uh-huh.
The Steve Cochran Show presents Hawk
Chicago
Opedia.
We may get a fracas here before it all ends.
A what?
What do we need to know about today's Hawkopedia, Dave?
Today's Hawkopedia, Duncan Keith.
Wendy, you were right.
I'm swooning.
You were right.
The Blackhawks' two-time Norris Trophy winning defenseman returns from his six-game suspension. He will play in his 117th postseason game for the Hawks tonight against the St. Louis Blues.
I knew that. I keep track.
Did you know that?
Yes, I do.
And you cannot overstate his importance to the Blackhawks. Last year, he averaged 31 minutes of ice time in the playoffs during the Hawks' run of the Stanley Cup, amassing a total of 715 minutes.
Wow.
In their opener in Nashville, he logged nearly 40 minutes and the game-winning goal at 7:49 of the second overtime. In Game 4 of that series, he played over 46 minutes. In Game 2 against Anaheim in the Western Conference Finals, when the Blackhawks tied the series, he played nearly 50 minutes.
Good God, y'all.
That's grueling.
In the playoffs, in his career, Duncan Keith has 15 goals and 60 assists of his 75 points. 22 have come on the power play, a power play which, as we know, sputtered in Game 1 against the Blues. Duncan Keith was the unanimous choice for the Conn Smythe Trophy as playoff MVP, the second defenseman in history, along with Bobby Orr, to win the Conn Smythe and score the game-winning goal in the game that clinched the Stanley Cup.
How about all that?
And that is awesome. Your Hawkopedia special Bill and Wendy edition.
Oh,
for
you're the
today.
Best, Dave.
Brought to you by anyone in particular?
Yes, Fresh Wave, the official deodorizer of your Stanley Cup champion Chicago Blackhawks.
Dave, when a player is logging the kind of minutes that Duncan Keith is logging, you just said about 31 minutes a game. That's a lot of time on the ice. Is it his decision to come off the ice and be spelled by another defenseman, or is that a Coach Quenneville move?
Well, I mean, ultimately, the coach is always deciding who's on the ice, but he's...
I'm tired. Will you take me out? Yeah, he doesn't say that.
Duncan Keith's never going to ask to come out, but I mean, well, I shouldn't say that. At some point, guys, they have to,
he needs
to take a little
a juice box,
a shift or something.
A nap? You can't just
that
play
might
off.
Be why something. He got a little defensive on the ice too. Maybe. A little tired.
Well, the guy a little cranky.
Yeah, maybe.
Well, the guy has been unbelievable. His conditioning is great. He doesn't seem to lose any of that, despite the fact he's past 30 now. And look, they needed him last year. Remember, Roosevelt was out. They were short. They were basically playing four defensemen.
And that's not enough.
It really would help if you have a couple more.
I been in talks with Coach Quenneville and saying, get me more defensemen.
And how does he respond?
Yeah.
What does he say?
Well, he doesn't hear my parts of the conversation.
Oh, I see.
He says, sign that restraining order. Yeah.
Right. That's right. That's right. And game one, it was such a tight game all the way through, and we lost it on a very fluke goal, a puck that bounced off the skate of Trevor Van Riemsdyk. When you're a player like that, I was trying to imagine what the next few days are like. It was so out of his control.
I don't think it was. It's probably something that I think as a team, the Blackhawks regret not winning the game.
Sure.
But on the other hand, I think they knew that this is going to be a tough series, and they're probably not going to sweep St. Louis, and they played, for the most part, well. They certainly played well enough to win that game.
Sure, they did.
But you know, they also were around a couple of years ago in Game 7 against the L.A. Kings when a fluky goal beat them at the United Center and sent the Kings on to the final.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it does happen when you get to overtime. A lot of times it's going to be a goal like that. It's not anybody's fault, really. It took a crazy ricochet into the net off of his skate.
Yeah. And he feels bad enough, TBR. There's no one who's going to go, you dummy.
Right.
You know, they're hey, man, it's that's what happens.
Could have been anybody. Yeah. It wasn't that he was in the wrong place.
Right.
It just a bad bounce.
Yeah.
But, you know, whether he's TBR to you or DVR to you, Bill.
Yeah.
It gets me confused because TAVO should be TiVo and TBR, DVR should be TBR should be DVR.
Yeah, it's all subliminal, isn't it?
That is a great idea.
Yeah.
I hadn't thought of that.
Can you stick for just a few minutes? Because there's another question or two we have, not just about the Blackhawks, but about the phenomenal season that the Cubs and the White Sox, I know we're just a week and a half in, but what a start to the season for both teams.
There's always this year.
There is always this year. All right, Dave Ennett is our super surprise guest. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. It's a good time to be a sports fan in Chicago. Both the Cubs and the White Sox are off to an amazing start. A little bit of talk about the Blackhawks, though, first. Dave Ennett is joining us. Dave, twice during the game the other night, during game one on Wednesday, the announcers referred to the rink. They said it gets smaller during the playoffs. What exactly does that mean when they say that the rink and the ice gets smaller during the playoffs?
Well, I think everybody plays a tighter game defensively, you know, and you try to take away the open spaces in the ice.
The actual rink is not.
Yes.
No, the dimensions of the rink remain the same.
Dimensions remain the same, yes. Right. They don't actually bring the dasher boards in and the benches. That's a good question.
And the nets get bigger. They slide like those things you put on your vents to deflect the air.
And sometimes they'll do what kids do on the ball field. They'll say right field is closed. They'll say that part of the ice is closed during the playoffs.
Yes, you can't hit right of center.
Right.
Yep. It's an automatic out.
It hits. Right. If anyone hits the puck there, it's an automatic out.
Yep.
You got to do that during the playoffs.
Sometimes
it makes the game more exciting.
Yes.
All right. I don't remember in my lifetime a time where not one, but both teams, I've heard that the Cubs is their best start since 1969, and it's the best White Sox start since 1970-something. But I don't remember a time where both teams at the exact same time have come out of the box like this.
I don't either. They've had years where they've both been making a run, or they've both been in contention, or when they played since the advent of interleague play, about 18 years ago, something like that. That where they would go into their series against each other, both with a chance,
mm-hmm.
but they've never both started this well.
Right.
I mean, it doesn't happen.
What this is going to do, though?
What?
It's going to make the hatred between Cubs fans and Sox fans less.
That's a great question, Wendy. I don't know if it will, because I sense that some of that vitriol has sort of, the last few years, maybe because the Cubs prior to last year had been struggling and the White Sox struggled certainly last year. It hasn't been quite as I think when one team is up and one team is down, I think it brings it out because the fans of the other team.
Absolutely, but if they're both doing well, I think I made the switch at the very end of the season last year when the Cubs looked like they were really going to do
something.
You
were very cordial.
I wanted them to win for the Cubs fans.
I feel for the Sox fans this week because of this, because it's like they just can't get it. You know, I mean, There's what, 7-1?
No, the Cubs are 8-1, and the Sox are 7-2.
Okay, right, and the Cubs are one game better. Is my point.
Right.
I mean, they're 7-2.
Right.
And they're still have the second best record in the team in the city.
Yeah.
Right now.
No. Here's where you feel for the Sox, because they come home for their home opener and it's snowing.
And
right.
And they suck.
They only get two home games in last weekend. They're off to this good start on the road. They come home. They're able to play two games. Then they go back on the road. Now, they've won 6 out of 7 on the road. They have the best road record in baseball.
Right.
The Cubs come home, and it's a little chilly. That's about the worst thing you can say. And they outscore the Cincinnati Reds in 3 games, 26-9 or something. I mean, they pound the Reds for 3 nights in a row.
Yeah.
The White Sox opening day was such a disappointment.
That's been their only bad day.
That's their only blip.
You guys, that is one of the biggest ones to start the season.
It would have been nice had they played a little better that day, but
I mean, fundamental errors.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, they've played one bad game.
Come on, Wendy, you're talking like a Sox fan now. Enjoy it.
And the Cubs have played no bad games. They lost a game in Arizona. They let one slip
away. The bullpen let it get away.
Right. All right, so we've had in almost 2 weeks of baseball together, the Cubs and the White Sox have had one bad game. That's unheard of.
15-3.
Well, the Cubs will have a bad game. Just wait.
Without a doubt, they will. Over 160.
I don't want to be the only one.
They'll have a losing streak.
Right.
The White Sox will have a losing streak. It's going to happen at some point. But the Cubs have shown, I think, that they are as good as people thought they were going to be coming into the season, and things that Cub fans worry about. That might go wrong.
Yeah.
Yes, a devastating injury. No question.
Kyle Schwarber.
So maybe that's it. Maybe that's the one really devastating thing that's going to happen to this team, because the pitching, all the starting pitchers have done well.
Yeah.
And the bullpen's been solid. They're hitting the whatever out of the ball,
it's
right?
Amazing.
I mean,
it's just amazing.
They've been really good.
Yeah.
This will be an interesting weekend because Colorado can also put up a lot of runs.
Yeah.
And they have a kid, Trevor Story, who's hit homered each of their first 4 games, first player in baseball history to hit a home run in each of his first 4 games in the major leagues.
Yeah, he's a monster. Yeah. Actually, I say he's a monster, but when you look at him, he looks very mild-mannered.
He looks very
un-monster-like. He can hit the ball 400 feet anytime he wants.
Well, a monster in his playing
ability. Yeah, he is.
Well, if they keep winning, I say Sox fans and Cubs fans are going to come together in harmony this year.
Wouldn't that really be something?
Would be. Because, look, they have others to the Sox should be worried about the Kansas City Royals. And they have the defending World Series champs in their division, and they have the same record.
Yeah.
And the Cubs still have to be looking over their shoulder at Pittsburgh and St. Louis and looking over at Washington, which is off to a great start. The Dodgers out and the Giants out west. So there's plenty to focus on outside a team that happens to play in your own city.
It's going to be a kumbaya year.
Mark that down, Dave.
A kumbaya
year.
Print it.
Dave, thank you very much. We appreciate your expertise. It's Dave Ennett. You can hear him on the Steve Cochran Show.
Not anymore.
Unless they run out of time.
We'd love to have you.
Feeder?
Yep. Right. All right. A quick break, and then Steve will give you the news. It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder on WGN.
This is my favorite part of the year, Bill.
Because why?
Because I get to garden.
Yeah.
I either have to move to somewhere where I can garden year-round, or I have to start making topiary trees,
right,
which I don't know if I want to do. But now's the time. My hyacinths have bloomed. My tulips are up.
What is wrong with the galaxy? Everything's in order.
Life is good.
It couldn't get any better.
Tony Fulmer is with us, Chief Horticulture Officer for Chalet Nursery out in Wilmette, 3132 Lake Avenue, chaletnursery.com. It is an exciting time when you look out there and you see your perennials have begun growing. It's like it is spring.
Everything is coming to life, and it's time you can get your edibles out. And I spent yesterday on my day off. I had 7 hours in the garden doing spring cleanup. So everything right now should be focused on getting rid of, cleaning up and preparing for a great year in the garden.
Tony, Wendy does have a green thumb, but couldn't it be circulation problems? I mean, really, it could be, couldn't it?
I think that's if it's purple.
Is that what
the problem is? If it's purple, then it's a circulation problem. If it's black, then it's if it's a black thumb,
yeah,
then it's a garden problem.
Oh, all right, good.
I do get so much dirt under my nails at this time of year. All right, so there are various plants that are coming up. Tulips come up.
All the spring bulbs should be up, and a lot of them, if they're not blooming, they should be budding.
Absolutely. And I have, again, perennials. You see, I leave, for instance, hydrangea. I leave the dead flowers on there that are dried because mm-hmm. in the wintertime, you don't just want like nothing in front of your house. It's nice sure. to kind of see the
winter interest.
Oh, I like that.
Winter interest.
But now is the time where you can cut all that dead stuff off, right?
Yes. Yeah. This is a really good time to start thinking about getting everything clean. And one of the biggest mistakes that people make is pruning shrubs. So if you're not sure, there's a general rule. If it blooms before July 1st, so if it's spring blooming, that means it's blooming on growth that it made last year, June, July, August, September. So all those spring bloomers that bloom before July 1st,
yeah.
you have 1 month from the time they finish blooming. So as soon as they finish bloom, you have 1 month, and then you need to. So, for example, lilacs,
mm-hmm.
When they bloom in mid-May, then you should have those finished by the middle of June, because if you prune them later.
Which I did. I had one flower.
Wendy,
one flower and a whole bush.
I wasn't going to call you out.
No, but I want to say this. I said it on the air last year. I had one flower on the whole huge lilac bush. And so Tony informed me that I pruned. He's like, did you prune? When did you? Oh, I did it at the end of the summer. I don't even know when I did it. I didn't touch it. And there are buds aplenty. So I'm going to have lovely lilacs smelling wonderfully.
Then the other thing is those things that are summer flowering. The things that bloom after July 1st, like a lot of the hydrangeas and Rose of Sharon and that sort of thing, you can prune them right now and clean them up. And the growth that they make in April, May, June, and early July will be the potential for the summer's flowers.
Can you prune after they've already flowered?
Prune that, what?
Like a Rose of Sharon.
A Rose of Sharon, it's really better because they bloom for a long period of time in the summer. It'd be really better if you did it right now or early in May. That's an interesting plant. It's one of the last things to leaf out in the spring.
It's so a weed, isn't it?
It can be. Everybody thinks it's dead because everything is up, the perennials up, the shrubs are blooming, the crabs are blooming, and the Rose of Sharon has done nothing, and everyone thinks, oh, it's dead. And then about the middle of May, all of a sudden, it just starts coming out. The older varieties that are what we call fertile, they can drop seeds all around. The single, or the semi-double, and the full double varieties are sterile, so those hybrids will tend not to seed around like the old single varieties.
Can you explain something to me? And we're starting to get calls for you, Tony, which happens immediately as soon as we say you're here. 312-981-7200 if you have any planting questions for Tony Fulmer. You just said, Wendy asked you, Tony, if something was a flower or a weed. You said it could be a weed. Explain that to me. How could something maybe be a flower and maybe be a weed?
Oh, the definition of a weed is any plant that is growing out of place.
Yeah.
So if you like to make dandelion wine, or if you like to use dandelion greens in your salad, then perhaps a dandelion isn't a weed.
Yeah.
If you are fussy about your lawn and you have 500 of them blooming in your lawn, then probably it's a weed.
All right.
So it's all about interpretation.
Although
there are generally a lot of things. There's usually a fairly defined line between what people consider a weed and what's a desirable ornamental plant.
Right.
Speaking of dandelions, I would like to give a tip to everyone listening out
there.
What
is it?
Oh, a tip from Wendy. Good.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the thing.
You need a pen, Tony? Here's a pen.
No, this is really
I hope to learn something.
All right.
Well, to dig out dandelions, you have to get the root.
Yes.
Or they're just going to keep coming back.
That's correct.
And they make like a dandelion. It looks like a little...
digger. Dandelion digger.
But it looks like the tongue of a lizard because it's forked at the end and you dig down deep to get the root out.
Mm-hmm.
There is a contraption made by Fiskars, and it's just a long upright pole, and there are like three blades. And when you push it into the ground, there's a little foot pedal, and you step down on it, and those three blades go in at an angle down to the root of the dandelion. And then you kind of lock it in place.
And extracts the whole
thing.
And
when you just pull it out, it takes... I mean, you pull this root up that is so long, and you can do this all while standing up. So Fiskars makes it. It's orange and black, and it is a dandelion weed puller. It is the greatest invention.
Did you know of this already, Tony? You must have.
Yes.
You're in the business.
Yes.
You know this stuff.
The important thing for anyone that's going to do dandelions manually, try and do it when the soil is a little bit damp, because regardless of whether you use the Fiskars or whether you use the little hand digger, if that soil's the least bit dry and you try and get under there with that little forked tongue tool, it will snap off, and what you will get is just multiple dandelions coming from that root, because you have to get that root out. You're absolutely right.
But to me, that's just so much better than, you know,
bending over,
yes,
crawling around in your yard.
Because sometimes I got a little butt crack thing going, and, you know, the neighbors drive
sometimes
by.
By accident,
and
Tony.
So this way you can do it standing up.
Mm-hmm. I'm leaving that one alone.
That's fine. Probably best.
Should we take a quick break and then get to all these questions?
Every line is full right now. If you're calling and it's busy, don't give up. 312-981-7200. Tony Fulmer is here to answer those questions for you. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
One of my favorite yearly guests, especially at this time when spring has sprung, Tony Fulmer, Chief Horticulture Officer for Chalet Nursery over on Lake Avenue, 3132 Lake in Wilmette. You can go to chaletnursery.com. We've talked a little about pruning. Someone has said, don't kill the dandelions. They're some of the first foods for the emerging pollinators. What does that mean?
Oh, that is true. Early in the spring like this, there's not a lot of things blooming, so the bees are really busy. Bees in particular and all the other pollinators are looking for sources of nectar and pollen, so that's absolutely true.
So don't kill them yet? I got to get rid
not
of them.
Not yet.
I got to get rid of them. I'll wait a week. That's all I can do.
Wendy's very impatient with the emerging pollinators, who were so good in the early days of MTV. Remember watching the emerging pollinators?
I do.
God, they were good.
That show seemed to go on
oh,
forever.
Oh, boy.
All right, I will shut up, and we will get to these questions because people want to talk to you. Donna, Tony Fulmer, go.
Hi. In front of my house on the north side, in between my shrubs and ground cover, I'm getting moss. Do I have to dig it up, or what do I do?
Well, you can use moss controls, but moss really is going to be one of those things that tends to recur, and so that would indicate that you probably have a shady,
yes,
maybe damp, even if it's not wet, probably stays damp,
yes,
and soils of low fertility. Those three things in combination means that moss will come back over and over and over again. So you can take it out, remove it, because it's very superficial, but until you get rid of, change any of those three conditions, or preferably all three, it's probably going to be a recurring issue.
Is it harmful
really,
to
no,
anything?
No, no, no.
So I've got to dig it up, right?
Yes, you can just skim it right off the top. There's not really a root system to
like
it to speak of.
Like a big clump.
Yep.
Yep.
So just skim it off, and it will be back.
Okay, thank you.
All Thanks. Right.
It's like, you know, the film on Jell-O?
Yeah.
You can take it all off like that. You just kind of can pull it with your hands, and it's like it pulls right off. Why are you looking at me so strangely?
I can't stand Jell-O, so I don't. I haven't had Jell-O since
or pudding, I guess.
Since I became an adult. Oh, pudding. Okay, now
okay.
That's a different
now
story.
You're talking
okay.
That's
now
what
I
meant, the skin
right.
on the pudding.
Right,
you know?
Okay.
All right.
Got Jell-O
no
pudding.
More.
You
okay.
saw Tony's Rider. No Jell-O references.
He gave me the dirtiest look I've ever seen. Ooh, I don't like Jell-O.
No Jell-O mentions. Like
pudding's different.
Okay.
Right.
I hope you like Julie, because Julie has a question. Hey,
hi, Julie.
Good morning, everybody.
Hi.
Our forsythia had about one-third of the bloom that it's had in years past, and it's been magnificent. I'm assuming perhaps we cut it back too late last year, or do we have to do a severe cutback this year?
No, you do not have to do a severe cutback, and probably your assumption is correct. Again, with the forsythia, when it finishes blooming, or since yours only had one branch with flowers on it, look around the neighborhood, and when the forsythia finishes flowering, you have 1 month. And within 1 month, you need to do whatever shaping or pruning. And the problem with that is going to be that forsythia is really vigorous. So you prune it that early, and you'll still have a lot of growth after that. But you have to kind of sort of live with that then the rest of the year.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
All right, I'm not going to have forsythia because late in the summer, I took off all the... I got to have Tony move in with me.
Sure.
I really do.
No Jell-O, Wendy. Keep Jell-O out of the refrigerator.
You prune it, and as you said, it still really grows, and it hangs over my tomato garden. So in the summer, I cut off those long fronds, and now I'm not going to have forsythia.
Mm-hmm.
Going to Michael's and getting the fake stuff.
Franz, by the way, is Wendy's neighbor.
Oh, okay. Sherman, yes.
Yeah.
Or Austrian, yes.
That's right.
Hi, Sharon. Tony Fulmer's here.
Hi. I was wondering why the burning bush is on the Illinois invasive species list. Other than it's a fast grower, I don't see it being a big spreader or taking over.
That you are right. I have to say, in my own yard, I have never seen it coming up wildly. I think perhaps it may be more of a problem a little bit farther south, but that no, it has not been a problem in my garden. I've never had customers come in and say that it's been a problem for them either.
Okay.
Thank you, Sharon. So there are some plants, some flowers that could be problematic in some areas, whereas 100 miles away, it's not a problem at all.
Yes, yes.
How about that?
Yes.
All right, I can never pronounce this type of evergreen.
Arborvitae.
Okay. This is 630. I have a globe.
Arborvitae.
That 1/8 of it is dead due to being too close to the driveway, salt from the winter. The rest of it's perfect. Is there anything I can do to the dead area?
All you can do is cut it out.
Cut it out, Bill.
Cut it out.
Cut it out.
Right.
No, literally, if that's
brown.
Will
it fill in?
It depends upon how prominent that is. The problem with arborvitae is when you are off of foliage and you're back just to stems, you will always just have stems because they don't have buds that are dormant that can break out and start growing to start filling in. So if it's a small enough space, you could prune that out and then try and start weaving the branches on either side of that are fine. You could try and start fluffing that out a little bit, but it's one of those things you can't really tell until you see what the plant looks like after you cut it out.
And that is a globe
arborvitae.
Thank you.
You're
you can
welcome.
Get the tall, skinny ones that make a good like a privacy thing,
hedge or
right?
Screen. Mm-hmm.
And those I've seen. My neighbor had problems where one of them was kind of dead, and he would cut it out, and he bungee corded other ones to it. And I looked this year; you couldn't even tell. You couldn't even tell where the hole was.
Not everyone can be a structural engineer to build these things or want to. So,
yeah.
But yes, generally speaking, when you cut out and you have a big hole like that, unless you work with it to try and somehow get it to mesh, it'll be a big hole.
All right. Robert is a gardener and has a question for you, Tony Fulmer. Hey, Robert.
Hi, how are you? Thank you for taking my call. I overwinter hostas in pots in my garage, and with it being so mild, they've grown considerably in the garage, and I wonder if it's okay to start taking the pots out of the garage and putting them outdoors so that they start getting used to the temperatures we have now.
Yes, that process is called hardening, and in any plant that has been exposed to warm temperatures prematurely but not full sun and winter wind, you're absolutely right, the tissue will be soft, and so you want to generally acclimate that very, very gradually. So yes, I would, if you cut off the old stems last year, I would get those outside immediately.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thanks, Robert.
You're welcome.
Take care.
All right, we planted Shenandoah red switchgrass last summer on our berm.
Panicum berm.
They've got a berm. Where do you get
a berm,
Tony? I want a berm.
You build a berm.
What's
feel
a berm?
The berm, Wendy. Trust me.
What's a berm?
A berm is a raised bed.
Oh, yep. Okay. Just say a raised bed then, so we don't feel so stupid. We cut the dried stuff down in February. Maybe it was March. While our other varieties of perennial grasses have started to sprout, we're not seeing any new growth from this red switchgrass. Did we kill it, or is it a late emergent?
It is a late emerger, so she's going to be fine on that. That's a plant that you really would have a hard time killing. So it is a warm season grass, so we just need warmer soil temperatures, and that will be up in a few weeks. But she absolutely did not kill it.
I killed my lavender, which I learned I overwatered it last year. I planted it, and I thought when you get new plants and you put them in the ground, you should really water them like crazy, unless it's lavender, because that doesn't really need a whole lot of water. I learned my lesson.
So you're trying that again this year?
I'm going to try it, and then because my plants did better when I was a little lazy.
Yeah.
But,
mm-hmm.
you know, I go out there, and I get too into it, and it's like they don't need that much
right,
soaking.
Sure.
And that brings me to 219 is texting, which lavender is edible, if any? English? Question mark. You can't eat lavender, can you? You can smell it. That's what
I
do.
You shouldn't eat lavender, Tony. Even if you're a berm owner, and you have been for years, you don't want to eat lavender.
That's one I can't answer. I'm not being. So I try to stay
really
away from the kitchen.
I don't think so. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Edibles, you know, you have to
take
be careful
the flowers
with.
And make sachets and put them in your.
That's the way
drawers.
To do it.
There you go.
And It's hard to see because it's a picture that someone has texted in, but I think we can explain it. They want to know if they should cut down the old wood, which looks like hydrangea bushes or something. Do you cut off that old wood that is just looking brown and dead amongst your daffodils? I don't think so, because it depends if you see buds on it, correct?
That's correct. I wouldn't answer that question without knowing what the plants are. So the question is it a perennial or is it a shrub? And if those are shrubs, you have to be really, really selective about it. The person should really tell us what that plant is. You can do a lot of things. You can do, rejuvenation prunes if it's overgrown. But again, you have to then change your expectations. If it blooms early in the season, then you lose all the season's flowers.
Which I did. And again, with my hydrangea, I'm noticing all the dead wood that's mm-hmm. basically on it and the mm-hmm. flowers. And if you just go look, if you don't know, look and see, because usually towards the bottom you will see some sprouts coming up. And if it's sprouting...
That's a good sign.
Yes, and that's now's the time to prune it.
And on the hydrangeas... like mine yesterday, I was noticing the buds are really, really small because I live closer to the lake. So those people that have had 10 degrees days that are warmer, things are going to be farther along. And so if you're not sure, always wait another day or two in the spring. The plants will change pretty dramatically quickly.
We're out of time already. Look at how quickly
this goes. Goes fast, Tony, every time you come by. No one knows more about plants or flowers than you. Thanks for sharing.
Or even berms.
Or berms.
Or berms.
We learned something today.
Those technical terms.
So true.
How can we reach you other than going to the Chalet Nursery at 3132 Lake Avenue in Wilmette?
You can actually email me if you like at tonyf@chaletnursery.com. Or you can look at my blog, www.hortaholic.com.
Hortaholic, I love that. Oh, that is so fun. It's fun, Bill.
It is fun.
And do you have lawn care tips? Because now's the time for lawn care. Will that be up on your blog soon?
That wasn't one of the things I have planned, but people can email me, and okay. I'll be glad to talk to them about it.
Perfect. Tony, thanks.
My pleasure.
See you next
as always.
Time. It's Tony Fulmer. We'll take a quick break. Steve with the news next. Bill and Wendy, WGN. Steve, thank you so much. We forgot to thank Tony Fulmer. This guy knows everything there is about flowers and plants. He astounds me, but he brought us each a nice plant, and I don't even know what kind this is. I didn't want to embarrass myself, because unless it's a rose or it says the name of the plant, I don't know what it is, but it's nice. It's very pretty.
It's a hellebore.
Wendy, that's not nice. He went out of his way to bring us a gift.
He's not a hellebore. I don't know how to say it, but it's a Lenten rose.
Is that what it is?
And the reason they're called that is because they bloom. They're the first things to bloom, usually before Easter.
Right.
And these are white, but then after they bloom color-wise, they turn into a green foliage type thing.
Yeah.
And it's up there all through the winter, so when everything else is dying and getting brown, this will stay green.
I like that.
It's a helleborus.
Yes, it is.
A Lenten rose.
Yes, it is.
There you go.
Kurt Wagner brought us presents of some kind. He brought us his own presents. He's here, and it's nice to see you, Kurt. We're thrilled that you're here. You know Kurt,
hey, Kurt.
From TVShowPatrol.com. Kurt, first of all, this is great news for anybody who was a fan of the old HBO series Tales from the Crypt. It's
loved
coming
it.
Back. Wasn't that a fun show? I love that show. It's coming back.
The Crypt
back.
Keeper?
Yes. And they'll have a... updated or reinvented Crypt Keeper is what they're saying. It's going to be on TNT, though.
Oh, it is?
Yeah.
Doesn't matter.
And M. Night Shyamalan
yeah.
is going to curate it.
That's going to
be
great.
The executive producer and everything. He's the guy who did Sixth Sense.
Right.
You're telling Bill that. Like,
I know M. Night.
He just
I know
said
my,
duh
M.
in his thought bubble.
He has had not a lot of luck with films of late. He started out as red hot as could be
right.
with Sixth Sense and a couple of others, but his last couple of years have not been great in terms of feature films. Is television
well,
that's the next progressive
step?
Well, he
produced Wayward Pines last summer
on which
Fox,
was pretty good. I like
and
that.
And there's a new season of that coming up.
Yeah. That's the Matt Dillon show where
yes.
Everything...
So, but I don't think Matt Dillon's in the second season.
Oh, he's not? Yeah. Oh, that's interesting. What do we need to know about the new version? I know you said it's not on HBO anymore. It's on TNT. But other than that...
Well, they're doing a Tales from the Crypt block of programming as well as a Tales from the Crypt show. So the show will be part of the block of programming. So they'll probably program like 3 hours of horror stuff.
Oh, thank you. You forgot the second
And I'm good either way. Whatever they want to show me, I'll watch.
And the Tales from the Crypt will be like the old one in that it'll be an anthology series, but each episode will be different.
Yeah.
And then,
was that the one where Ted Danson was buried in the sand? Was that a Tales from the Crypt? No, that was Creepshow, I think.
Yeah, that was
but
the
that's
movie
what
Creep
it was
Show.
Very much like.
Yeah, it was like the old pulp comics of the 1940s
right.
And
it's
50s.
Based on those, what is it, AEA comics? I can't remember the thing, but it's based on those. So TNT this week announced that they're also have a thing called Time of Death, or they're shooting a pilot for this
what is that?
Thing called Time of Death, which is a season-long horror anthology series.
Yeah.
That will have, it's sort of like American Horror Story, in that it'll be one story each season, but each season the story will be different.
What do you attribute the reemergence of this sort of television to? Is it Walking Dead, kind of, or is
well,
it something else?
I think you mean the horror stuff or the anthology stuff?
Both.
Well, the anthology stuff, I think, is because of the success of American Horror Story.
Yeah.
And the horror stuff, certainly could be Walking Dead, but you know, it's been around, it comes up, it's so cyclical, I think, and you know, once something gets popular, then every network wants their version of that thing, you know, like one network did a successful adaptation of a foreign TV show, and now suddenly everybody's trying to grab the rights, the US rights, to remake a foreign TV show, and you know, it's just all.
I have a question. You're speaking of American Horror Story and the American Crime Story, which they were behind the OJ.
Yeah.
Right.
So Sarah Paulson was on it, but you didn't see Jessica Lange or any other people involved. Do they save money if they keep using the same actors
all the
time? And why do they do it? It just seems kind of weird to me. I like it, but
Well, the actors like it, I think, because it's a steady gig.
Yeah.
But you know, they don't have to do the same character. They can do the same character for 13 episodes or whatever it is.
Right.
But they don't have to do it for 5 seasons mm-hmm. of the same character, which is, you know, nice. It's sort of a middle ground of a movie versus, you know, a 5-season long mm-hmm. thing. The reason Sarah Paulson was in both was because Ryan Murphy was the executive producer of both, and he really likes her.
She's really something else,
she's really
man.
Good. So he was, you know.
I watched The Asylum, and that's the only one I saw of the American Horror Story. Mm-hmm. She's an awesome actress.
Yeah,
where
is.
Did she come from?
Oh, she's been around for a long time. Deadwood was the first place I think most people kind of took note of her.
I didn't watch that, but yes, that makes sense.
Yeah, she was really good on that. We were talking about how for the next season, the O.J. Simpson show, The People vs. O.J. Simpson, was part of American Crime Story, and they've said that for season 2, they're kind of leaning towards doing the Menendez brothers trial. Is that in stone? Do we know that for sure that that'll be season 2? Or are they still kind of mulling over their options?
I think they're mulling over it. I did read something about a Menendez thing, but I wasn't sure if it was the American Horror Story franchise who was doing that. I thought somebody else was.
The two that made the most sense to me anyway, Kurt, were that story, the Menendez brothers, or the JonBenet Ramsey case. I think either of those would be a nice follow-up to the O.J. Simpson.
Yeah, NBC is doing a Menendez brothers
thing.
Oh, are they?
They're doing it?
Because, yeah, see, I mean, that's just another example of something works, then everybody
Somebody's
tries to get
copy.
It. I mean, NBC did a live musical, and now Fox is doing live musicals like crazy.
Yeah.
So it's sort
that
of
seems so crazy, doesn't it? I mean, that's how why you have Burger King and McDonald's right across the street from
right.
each other. But it
so
just,
you know, the American Crime Story, they might have been thinking about doing the Menendez brothers, and then but they didn't announce it. So,
but
NBC
you're right about
them
the musicals.
The
you know, Wendy and Ryan Burrow from the Newsroom are doing Annie Get Your Gun in August.
Are you really?
Yeah.
It's going to be no,
great.
We're not.
It's going to be great.
I thought I heard an angel sing.
I would totally watch you as Annie and Annie Get Your
Wendy,
Gun.
Don't say no. I think it's a good possibility.
If we're really doing it, sure, I'll audition.
shooting something from behind.
From behind?
I could do that, no
That's
problem.
Easy. Come on. Kurt Wagner's here from TVShowPatrol.com. If you have a question or a comment about your favorite TV shows or the ones you don't like, 312-981-7200. Back in a little bit, it's WGN. Kurt Wagner's here from TVShowPatrol.com, and the calls are coming in. If you have a question, 312-981-7200. Before we get to those, there's a chance, and I'm not a Game of Thrones guy. Wendy, you don't watch Game of Thrones, but there are people who just love it, love every minute of it. There's rumors
Kevin
now.
Likes it.
Kevin, our producer, is
he
one of those
just pointed
people.
To himself, so he wanted
people.
To get in the conversation.
Kevin, come on in.
There's rumors that this could be the final season for Game of Thrones.
No.
What do you know? It won't be?
No, it's not the final season, but it's probably the last season. It'll be 10 episodes.
What does
because
that mean?
This season is when they've gone beyond the books.
Yeah.
So the producers have talked about, you know, we might have enough story for X many episodes.
So they'll cut it back to like six or
seven,
eight a year?
It would be seven the next season,
oh,
six the final season.
Wow.
Would that mean I'd still have to wait a year?
Yes, that's the problem. But, you know, the problem with that show is that they couldn't do all those at once because it just costs so much to make, and the filming schedule is so brutal. They film in they have permanent setups in three different countries,
yeah.
I think. And it's just, you know, it's just hard to launch that thing.
Of course.
Unless you're, you know, $80 bajillion.
But there was a time where if you only did 10 episodes a season, people were like, well, that's not a lot for a full season. And now they want to cut it back.
That's kind of a cable norm, I think, was 10.
Yeah.
You know, and it's not a done deal yet. They're still talking about it, and HBO's still talking about it with them. But, you know, if they want to stay true to the vision, you know, when they originally set out, they said X many episodes.
Yeah.
And so if that works out, that would work out to, like, 10 this season, 7 and 6.
And cut back from there. All right. Some calls are coming in for you, Kurt, at 312-981-7200. If you have a question about a show, Kurt's your guy. Let's start out with Marianne. Hi, Marianne. What's up?
Hi, good morning. Enjoying the show.
Thank you.
I was so shocked about, I love The Blacklist.
Oh, be careful. Be careful. Spoiler alert. A major thing took place this last week,
Marianne,
right?
Marianne knows better.
Yeah.
I hope.
Okay. All right. I can't believe it. And then it's almost like they did it and it would be like it was the last episode, but no, it isn't. There's another one. And I can't believe, are they going a total different direction? She was so...
Are we spoiling?
We have to be very careful in how we say this.
Okay.
There's a major turn of events that took place on Thursday's episode.
And
I watched part of it. And we may not... What we saw may not have actually... And other shows have employed this technique before where
may
you see something,
happened.
You're not sure exactly what you saw is true or not.
Maybe Red Reddington cooked the books.
So wait, Marianne, you're calling to find out what happened? Because we can't. It just happened.
We can't divulge.
No, I did see it. I just couldn't believe it happened because...
And you wanted to chat with someone about it.
It would change the course of the show dramatically if what we saw...
Holy moly.
Right.
Well, but, you know, Red would still be around. They'd just have to have...
I know.
I don't know what you're all talking about because I don't watch the show, but there are people that do that are probably really mad at all of you.
Well, that's why
I think there's talk of a spinoff series from that show too.
Oh, is that right?
Really?
Yeah. It's actually they've made a pilot. Are they making a pilot? I did read that in the pilot list.
Yeah.
That involves what's his face, the tall dude.
Manute Bol.
Is Manute Bol on the Blacklist?
Yeah, Manute Bol is
Liz's
on the Blacklist.
Liz's ex.
Tom.
Liz's ex.
Oh, what's Tom.
His? Yeah, Tom.
Yeah.
Tom. He's Well, like. I could see where that would go because of what happened yesterday, too.
Yeah.
Okay. Marianne, I love you. I have never been so confused in all of my life between all three of you.
Well, we don't want to divulge too much for people who haven't seen last night's episode. But
you know,
you're
it's always tough if a character wants to leave a show. You know, how do you go about getting rid of the character?
Well, I thought in real life there was a pregnancy. Is that true?
I don't know.
She was pregnant?
I haven't watched that show since the first season, so I can't really help
it's
a
so
lot
good.
With that. But,
it's really good.
It's so good.
Yeah,
Marianne, I got to let you go because I have a feeling more stuff is going to come out.
We don't want to give away too much. Thanks, Marianne.
Have a great weekend.
Boy, never in the history of radio we've not helped her at all.
She just wanted to commiserate with somebody who watched it. Thankfully, you did because I didn't know how to comfort her.
Yeah,
Off-camera conversation.
I have to ask you something too about The Walking Dead. Now we don't know who's been offed. It's a major character, and we don't know this yet. There are a lot of speculations. I've watched so many videos of people, you know, slowing down the order and the eeny, meeny, miny, mo and figuring, you know, he looked to this direction. But here's my question. Norman Reedus, who plays Daryl, who is a stud muffin. I don't know when the last time I used that word was. But he's got a spinoff show about he and his motorcycle, but he could do both shows, right?
Yeah, that's not Daryl, though. That's Norman Reedus on a motorcycle. That's a reality show.
But that's my question, because half your mind goes, well, it's got to be him then, because he's got... But that's not a necessary...
You could do both.
Like a reality show.
My guess is he would do that in hiatus, and especially if it's a show where he's just riding around and stuff. That could be done in, you know...
You might see me on the back of his bike or in his sidecar.
In a month.
I'm going to stalk him big time.
You know, he always comes to Chicago every year for that con, that little convention.
Yeah, the Walker Stalker con. I go to it every
year. Well, there's the other one, too, that he's always here for. But
he has a better chance of being bit by Wendy than he does of a zombie.
That's true.
All right, we don't
have
time. But
maybe he would like it better, you know, dressed up as a zombie.
Yeah.
I could try
that, Wendy.
No,
see what happens.
We have no time to get to all these questions.
Will you come back next week? It's a cliffhanger.
I'll come back next week.
All right, more of Kurt Wagner next week. For those of you whose questions did not get answered, we didn't even answer the questions that did get answered.
It's a lot of you. Sorry.
I know. 312-981-7200. Go to Kurt's website, tvshowpatrol.com. It's a good one. Thank you, Kurt. Have a great weekend. More after this. Bill and Wendy, WGN. Thank you, Bob. I thought you did a great job with the news, if you ask me.
Who thought he didn't?
I thought Bob Kessler hit a home run out of the park.
He always does.
Out of the park.
Can I tell you, coming up later on today,
yep,
before we get out of here at 3 o'clock, mm-hmm, sometime this afternoon, I'll be honest, it's not going to happen before noon.
Right, that's fair.
But we do have a two-night stay in a one-bedroom courtyard suite at the Bailey's Harbor Yacht Club Resort in Door County, Wisconsin to give away. That'll come up. Your chance to win. We'll tell you how to do it all before 3 o'clock today.
Very nice. We're looking forward to this. Doc Emrick will also join us in the second half of the show. Sportscaster extraordinaire. One of the finest that's ever called a hockey game.
God, I love that man.
Nice man. It turns out, Wendy, that your mom...
My mom? Elaine?
It doesn't mention your mom in the story, but I think your mom certainly is part of the group that even though your mom told you a bunch of stuff when you were growing up and you went, what does my mom know? She's a dinosaur. She lived in a cave.
I never ever said that. Although I know one thing is not true that she told me.
What did she tell you that wasn't
true? She told me I looked in the mirror too much and I was very vain and that if I kept looking in the mirror, I'd get worms in my stomach.
Why would she tell you that?
Because my mom was a nutball.
Was there even one time where she told you that, where you even pondered it and thought, well, there's a chance of that?
Yeah, we had a big picture window in our house, and at night it served as a really great, it was like I was on a giant movie screen.
Oh.
And I would dance and do stuff, and she'd say,
Do that ever?
When I'm over there.
Sometimes you
do? At night.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think she was just telling me to stop doing it because the neighbors could see.
Oh, it was embarrassing her throughout the neighborhood. My mom would say, and this was something I guess other moms would say, but my mom used to say this a lot. And when I think back, it wasn't just my mom. It was all the women in her family. It was like a thing that the women in her family said, like, if there was a food that I ate a lot of, like I enjoy grapefruit and I eat a lot of grapefruit. And my mom would say, you eat so much grapefruit, you're going to turn into a grapefruit. We didn't have the internet back then, so I couldn't look that up. But even that, like as a little kid, I went, well, that's not a thing. You don't become the thing you eat most of. Do you? I don't think there's never been a chance of a guy just turning into the food he ate a lot of.
If that were true, Bill, you would be looking at a giant pizza right now.
Wouldn't that be nice? That would be fantastic.
That's the one time you would.
That would be.
In a cannibal
like
situation, you would not
would
partake.
That.
But if I was a pizza.
Different story. Different all-time story. Well, over at Huffington Post, they put together a bunch of things that they said, your mom told you these things when you were growing up, and it turns out she was right.
Who knew?
How about that? Your mom probably told you about the virtues of sending thank you notes. And when you were a kid, you went, I'm a kid. I don't need to send thank you notes. Guess what? Your mom was right. Send thank you notes.
That is the most charming and nicest thing you can do. And I am terribly guilty of not doing it.
Oh, you have to.
But when you get a handwritten, mailed thank you note from someone,
right,
it is so touching.
Even when you know it's a form thank you note, even when you see it and it says, thank you for the generous gift you sent me. The gift you sent me is the greatest gift you sent me that I've ever received, and it's not specific. Even then, you go, well, at least they took the time.
No, that's a cop-out.
At least they took a minute out of their busy day to send me this form thank you note.
And I was so good with the kids about that when they were little and they had kids at their birthday party, because I said you have to specify thank you for whatever the particular item was.
Do it.
And I really pushed them to do that, and then I don't do that anymore.
You don't
anymore.
Do it? Oh, you should pick that up again.
They don't really invite friends to parties anymore.
Oh, well, still send a thank you note. Just saying, I was thinking about 8 years ago when you came to my party and how much I miss you. How about this one? Your mom probably told you that you should take piano lessons, and you went, I don't want to take piano lessons. It says that it's a fact. One day you will appreciate that your mom forced you to take piano lessons. And I think you could apply that to almost anything. Your mom said, look, I know you don't want to do this, but it'll make you a more well-rounded person. And turns out she was right again.
But I think they're specifically talking about piano lessons. Did you take them?
No, and I
did.
Wanted to.
You did?
Yeah.
I had to because my aunt was my teacher.
That's
I'm glad
not,
I did.
Do you? But you can't play the piano,
can you? I
can
play
you?
A little.
Can you? I
yeah.
didn't know that.
You don't know a lot about me.
I don't think I did.
I'm not good, but I did take lessons for many years. I could read music because of that.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
And you understand the importance, the value of that. It does. It makes you a more dimensional person, doesn't
it? Yeah, because when you're at a party and someone has a grand piano, you can go, gather around, and
sure.
you can play a little Heart and Soul.
Da, 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 da. That's a good time for everybody.
Yeah, it is fun.
And people would send you thank you notes. Thank you for playing Heart and Soul. You changed my life. Your mom probably told you that a tongue ring isn't really a good idea, and you said, no, it is a good idea.
No, I
she
said, thank you, Mom. You were right.
You were right about the tongue ring. Yeah.
We're so old. I'm sorry. That was just like an old fogey
answer. No, I'm sure
answer.
There's plenty of people who look great with tongue rings. Your mom told you to wear sunscreen. Turns out, again, mom knew what she was talking about. You know about the dangers of skin. You don't want skin cancer. Your mom was doing the right thing in telling you to put on sunscreen.
Yeah, but they weren't that. Now I'm terrible about it with my kids. I have a redhead. That's what happened.
Yeah.
But I didn't wear sunscreen. I put baby oil on.
I don't remember there being, like, now if you go to any pharmacy, if you go to an Osco or a CVS, you'll see a giant aisle just devoted to SPF factors. You pick a number.
Four up to 80, up to 100.
I know. I don't remember that being a thing. I remember they would have, like you said, there were creams that would attract the sun, and then there was a small booth of solar cane because you had too much sun.
Right.
But there wasn't the sun.
Take the pain out.
Right. I know. But
yeah, my mom wasn't that good because it wasn't. You always had the copper tone, but that was like 4 or 8.
Right.
I think they might have made 32 as we were getting older, but
I don't
by
remember
then,
seeing it. Yeah, by then
it was the white bottle. The white bottle meant you're not getting any color this summer.
Right.
The brown bottle meant you know, put some on if you think about it.
Right. You might as well just put on a blanket because you won't be getting any sun this summer. Okay, your mom was right about a whole bunch of things. Do you have any? What did your mom tell you that it turned out? I hate to admit it, but you were right, Mom. 312-981-7200. If you're on hold, stay there. We'll get to more of these next. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
She was born a long, long time ago. Your mother should know.
Yeah, it turns out your mom was right. She told you a bunch of stuff when you were growing up, and you just kind of went, what do you know? Come on. But you shouldn't run with scissors. It's bad to run with scissors. Don't do it. And watch your fingers when the door is closing because you'll get them chopped off. Your mom was right.
You know, that is the most vindicating feeling ever in the whole wide world when my sons look at me and go, Mom, you were right.
Yeah.
Of course, they forget that the next time. But every once in a while when I hear it, it just, and I don't need to be right or wrong. I just want them to know that I'm right once in a while.
Yeah.
It's a really good feeling. Hi, Marty. What did your mom tell you?
Hey, guys. You're the best. I love listening to
Thank
both you. Of
you. You're very nice. Thanks, Marty.
You're like Cuff and Link.
Thank you.
Oh, hey, thank you so much. Where's Adrian?
Here's two very common ones. Don't cross your eyes. They'll stay that way.
Yep. Every mom says that, don't they?
Yeah, but Marty Feldman's mom never told him and should have.
And here's the other one. Dun, 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 you'll go blind.
Sure.
Yeah.
If you do that, you'll go blind.
I have 20/20 vision.
To which a lot of kids would say, how about if I just do it till I need glasses? Is that okay? But a savvy mom isn't onto that.
Love it, Marty. Thank you so much.
Hey, guys. Have a good weekend.
You too.
You
thanks.
As well. I love Fridays. Everybody's in a good mood on Fridays.
Sure.
Debbie has something that her mom told her. Hi, Debbie.
Hey, how you doing, guys? I love you, love you, love you.
Thank you, Debbie. You're
right
very
back
nice.
At you.
Just wanted to say, my mom used to say, I have a good one and a bad one. She used to say, the least said, the least mended, meaning...
What does that mean? Because I've heard that, too.
Meaning, you open your mouth and you say it, you may have to apologize for it.
I still
am not doing it all the time. But the other, and I was thinking about the piano, my mom made me take accordion lessons for 3 years. To this day, I can't even look at an accordion.
So, really?
I hated it. Everybody else took piano, and I had a red accordion.
But you know it attracts men. Men see a woman with an accordion. You own them. You know that.
You know, Al Yankovic wasn't around then, so maybe it would have been Al.
Right. That's true.
Neither was Vlasta. You could have been the Vlasta or Judy Tenuta.
Please, hello. Anyway, thanks, guys.
Thanks,
always
Debbie.
Always listening to you.
Thank you. Have a good weekend. Thank you.
Thanks. 630 says, I learned to play the piano just so I can play sloppy drunk covers of Benny and the Jets. Usually when the guy at Von Maur takes his break, they have my picture up there now.
Oh, nice.
Look out for this guy.
That's nice.
Another thing that their mom told them, and this is Katie. Hi, Katie.
Hi. Well, actually, this is my father, who is in the Navy, a Corsair pilot. And he told me, I'm going to be 75, and from the time I can remember, if you don't stand for something, you'll fall for anything. You know you've been taught right from wrong, and keep your same morals, and you'll, you know, be straight as an arrow, and you'll never go wrong. It is true. I never drank. I've never been drunk. I never smoked. Never did drugs.
Good for you.
That's all, what a solid way of saying it. Your dad was a smart man.
Yes, he was. He was a good man. But and then also, I have six children. They're adults, but... I had three sons and then three daughters, and my oldest son said to his sister, he says, look, now listen to me. He goes, if mom tells you don't do this or this will happen, believe her. She's telling you the truth because I learned the hard way. Isn't that cute? Now, if
your
brother, big brother tells you, you'll listen because, you know, maybe you think, oh, mom don't know what she's talking about. But, yeah, I love you guys. Isn't this a beautiful day?
Oh, thank it sure is. Lord. Thank you so much, Katie.
Thank you, Katie. And your kids love you because for your older son to tell a sibling that.
Right.
That's awesome. Yeah.
No question about it.
Do you have other ones?
I got a couple more. These are things your mom told you at the time. You thought, what does she know? But she was right. Your mom at some point told you that your ex wasn't really good enough for you, and you fought her on it. You said, oh, no, this guy, I love this guy. What are you talking about? Now she was right. That wasn't the right guy for you, or he wouldn't be your ex.
Well, unless you got back together and got married, yes. Then she better take
right.
it back.
Right. True, I guess. Did she criticize some of the guys you went out with,
every
your mom?
Guy.
Did she really?
And you know what? As soon as I wasn't dating them anymore, she loved them.
Because they weren't in the future for you anymore.
Yeah, but she just, I don't know. She liked Jim.
Yeah.
She died a month after our wedding, but she was very... She had strange compliments, and when I had brought Jim to our White Trash Beach Club, she said to me, Wendy, he's a real nice guy, and he has very straight legs.
Oh, well, what else do you want in a potential son-in-law? That's great.
Great, Mom.
That's fantastic.
Thank you.
Who were you dating prior to that? Just guys with, like, crazy legs, Fonseca? Who were you dating?
No. I don't know. She was just, that's her way of doing. She didn't want to be too overly appreciative. But then I found out later that she liked that Jim could keep me in my place.
Yeah.
That's the part I don't like about
Jim.
That's
weird. That's strange. Your mom probably warned you about the dangers of sitting too close to your television set. Now, this is something I've thought about for a long time. When I was growing up, my mom on a daily basis would insist that my brother and I back up. Don't sit so close to the television set. It'll ruin your eyes. But now kids are right on their computer screen all the time.
That's a good point.
They're a foot away, and no parent is saying, get farther away from your computer screen.
Yeah, but look how many kids wear glasses now.
Oh, there's that. All right. Your mom said this. Was she right? You tell me. If you can't say something nice about somebody, don't say anything at all. Every mom says that. That one I'm kind of in the middle on. Sometimes it's fun to say something not nice about somebody.
I know. I really try not to judge other people because I do not like to be judged.
Yeah.
I really try, but you're right. Sometimes it's...
Sometimes you
gotta
need
do
to...
It.
Yeah.
Sherry, what did your mom or dad tell you?
Well, my mother always said, one of these days you're going to have children and they'll behave just like you did.
Did you get your kid?
I got my kid, and I've said the same thing to him.
Yeah, me too.
And now I'm getting the biggest laugh in the world every time these kids behave like he did.
I can't wait till my kid has kids so I can say, neener, neener, neener. Yeah. Yeah. That's a good one, yeah. Sherry. Have a great weekend.
It's wonderful.
Thank you, Sherry. Yeah, that's one that almost comes with the kit when you become a parent. Somebody at the hospital will say, hey, before it's all said and done, make sure you say to your kid, I hope you have kids just like you.
Yeah, but I turned out okay to some people.
Right.
Hi, Marjorie.
Hi, Wendy. My mother always used to tell me, never go out without lipstick on because you never know when you're going to meet your next husband.
Now, there's a guy version of that. The guy version of that is always make sure you're wearing clean underwear because you never know when you're going to be in an accident.
That's a girl's version.
Did you get that too?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the lipstick thing, because if I go out without lipstick, I look like James Spader. So see, your mom was right, Marjorie.
You're not. And you know what my father said? He said, you're going to have a kid that never fills the ice tray.
Because that was you?
When there was those ice trays. The aluminum ice tray.
Yes. Do you know how many family fights happened because of those stupid ice trays?
I know. Yeah.
It's terrible.
And now we have bags.
Oh, how about that? Marjorie, thank you. Have a great weekend.
Love you guys.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Thank you so much. How sweet. People are nice on Fridays, especially when it's sunny out and the Sox and the Cubs are doing
Puts
well.
Puts you in a good mood, doesn't it?
The Hawks are playing tonight.
I know. Everybody's in a good mood. Steve Bertrand will be by in just a little bit. He's got the Wintrust business lunch. We'll find out what he has. Thanks, everybody, for contributing on that. Steve, in a moment. Bill and Wendy, WGN. Thank you, Bob Kessler.
You're totally welcome, dude.
That's the way news people talk now, Wendy.
I like
it. We've caught up.
It's a new generation of news people.
There was just something about that music that made me want to say that.
You know what it is? It's the weather. It is so nice out there. Everybody wants to hang loose, dude.
Nice now, even nicer tomorrow and Sunday. Highs somewhere in the 70s. I'll take that. That's not bad.
I'm going out in my bikini. How about you?
Are you going to wear a bikini, Bob?
Yes.
Nice.
Is it a coconut bikini?
Nice.
I have, you know, I haven't decided.
You know we're on the air.
Yeah.
Okay.
Good thing I put my drool guard up on my microphone because I started, Bob, I'll be honest with you, I started to drool just a little bit. Not too much, just enough.
Now, that's better than throw up a little bit in your mouth.
Right. So much better.
All right. Well, with the weather being so nice, I have a question for you guys.
Huh.
Isn't it illegal to ride bikes on the sidewalk?
Yes.
In Chicago, yes.
I just almost got hit by a divvy bike person.
You're not supposed to do that.
Yeah.
Can I make a citizen's arrest? How do I do it? They're long gone.
How do you do it? Just like Barney Fife.
Citizen's arrest like they did.
Arrest.
That's the way to be. Just like Bob did. You have to yell that out in a Barney Fife-like voice.
There were also, moments ago, two young women on the divvy bike who were on the sidewalk taking a selfie.
Yeah.
Are there rules that little pamphlets that are given out when you rent a divvy bike that says don't ride it on the sidewalk? Because there should be.
I've still not ridden a divvy bike, to be honest
with
you.
Why would
you? I have my own.
Yeah, me too.
I have a big wheel that I get around in. I'm very proud of my adult sized big wheel.
The only problem is you don't bring it downtown. So what if you wanted to take a bike ride now?
Oh, that would be a problem. That would definitely be a problem. But you're right. There's people, I mean, even people who aren't on bikes, if you're just crossing the bridge right over there, there's so many people taking pictures and stuff like that. It's just dangerous everywhere you go.
But I've seen divvy bikes all over the sidewalk since it's warmed up, and I really almost got hit.
You'll see more and more of them. And now we're going to have, how many more miles did they say of bike lanes, Bob? Do you remember? There was just an announcement yesterday or Wednesday.
I don't
that
know.
The mayor's adding more miles and miles of more bike lanes.
Know. I wasn't on that day, so I don't know. Oh. I have no information about only the days that I'm here.
Only the work days,
I know
the
news of.
Right.
All right. Well, Rahm Emanuel is now saying, you know, we can't let the Lucas Museum die because someone else is going to get it. So now he's going to, he wants to tear down a part of the McCormick place.
Right.
That's not going to fly. And what will the people of the park or whatever they are?
The friends of the park.
They're no friends of mine. Get this museum going.
It's
going to mean so much for the city.
Oh, I'm with you on that. But he's smart to have a second location because you don't want to lose this. San Francisco's the city that most people think it would go to if for some reason we lose this. And it does. It'll generate all kinds of revenue. So I think this was a wise move to come up with a secondary location just in case. backup.
And what has transpired with the Friends of the Park? Because I thought that there was no chance that they were going to halt the building of this. And actually, I had heard that they said, go ahead and start planning, even though this isn't really confirmed yet.
Right. I don't know. I'm anxious to see what happens. I would love for them to build it here. I'm hoping that it's built here.
I know I'm married to one of the top Star Wars aficionados in the world, but it's not even that. I don't care about that for me. I just think it would be a really great thing to have.
Sure.
And to lose it because the Friends of the Park say you can't obstruct the lakefront. It's not really. It's a parking lot. I mean, I could see the Bears fans suing because where will they tailgate?
The Bears fans have problems of their own.
Here we go.
If you're a Bears fan... The Friends of the Park are not at the top of your problems list.
Listen, we have the Blackhawks playing tonight, game two in the St. Louis Blues series.
Yeah.
We have the Cubs and Sox doing very, very well.
Mm-hmm.
This is the Bears' year.
Mm-hmm. Mm-mm. Mm-mm.
It's their year because the other teams are doing well?
You guys?
Therefore, it spreads around?
When you suck... You suck that
the
season.
The whole world sucks with you.
That's the way a song goes.
Could be said that way. But, I mean, you have to give them... You live in Chicago. You have no other team you can root for.
Well...
They're going to switch it around.
What do you think is going to happen? You be honest with me. Be honest.
I think they're going to surprise everyone.
They've been surprising people regularly for years and years and years. But when the season is over, how far do you think that they'll get?
I'm not willing to make any kind of wager.
Because?
Well, because you don't know.
Come on. I know. Everyone knows.
You don't know now what's going to happen then. Are you a soothsayer?
Yes. You want me to say sooth?
Yes.
Sooth. I proved it.
On that note, we will take a quick break, and then I want to talk about a Blackhawks error. Or was it an error? I don't know.
All right. Yeah, that's coming your way next. A little Blackhawk talk. It's Bill and Wendy WGN.
I'm sure they do snicker, because at our hardware store, when you just walk down the stairs, they pounce on you to say, what can I help you with?
Right.
Fog you, I say.
That's what you got to say to them.
And then they go, well, fog you too.
Yeah, and then there's pushing and shoving.
This week on Chicago's Best, Brittany and Elliot are popping tops at the best BYOB spots around town.
Don't you want to talk to our sales staff and just go, you guys are messing with our heads?
Or at least give us a warning that a new client has come on, because
that's
one day only sale, I guess, after that. tune in to Chicago's Best Sunday night at 10 on WGN-TV. I had mold in our basement. It's very dangerous.
Nobody wants mold.
And I had the black mold.
Did you?
It's like the plague.
Yep.
It's terrible.
Yep. So true.
So I wish I had fog you at the time.
Well, I don't know if they made it back then, but it's very popular with the kids now.
All right. There is a big rivalry with the Chicago Blackhawks and the St. Louis Blues. The Hawks are in St. Louis again tonight.
Right. Game two.
And the fans of St. Louis go to one of their Dunkin' Donuts. They go to get coffee because, if you want my opinion, one of the best coffees around.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, they get a cup that says Dunkin' Donuts, official coffee of the Chicago Blackhawks with the Indian head on it.
Oh, how about that?
That is bad. And we just called the particular Dunkin' Donuts, and Kevin, they were told they can't talk about it. Management.
Well, what's behind that, do you think? How does that happen?
Because they're, this is what the defense is, quote, an untimely shipping error.
Yeah.
Led to a St. Louis Dunkin' Donuts shop serving coffee cups and emblazoned with the logo of St. Louis Blues rival Chicago Blackhawks. The Dunkin' Donuts in Kirkwood, Missouri, it's a suburb of St. Louis, received a shipment of these coffee cups featuring the Blackhawks logo. The Blues began their first round playoff series versus the Blackhawks on Wednesday night.
Mm-hmm.
We're playing tonight, game two. St. Louis news station issued a statement on behalf of the Dunkin' Donuts location. And do you want to hear their statement?
What did they say?
And I quote,
mm-hmm.
Due to an untimely shipping error from the regional distribution center, being a local business owner and fan of the hometown team, the franchisee plans to switch out the cups as soon as they receive a new shipment.
I would imagine.
So one of their employees is driving somewhere to pick them up, because those are the only cups they had.
I would think, this is just a guess, but I would think this is bad for business if you're that close to St. Louis and there is such a heated rivalry. If you go into that particular establishment and get a cup and it's a Blackhawks cup, that could hurt your business, couldn't it?
Yes, but so the franchisee ceased sales of beverages in the Blackhawks cups on Wednesday, according to KMOV radio station, news station.
Mm-hmm.
And they have great coffee. So if you go in there, yeah, could I have a French cooler and a cup of coffee? Sorry, no coffee.
No, can't help you.
They're not. They weren't selling it.
Why? I wonder how much revenue they lost in just a couple days.
That's probably why they won't talk to us.
Right, they're not too pleased, I would imagine.
They're saying we're buying the shipping error explanation, but not ruling out a Blackhawks super fan in shipping and receiving pulling off a playoff-inspired prank here, which would be rather awesome.
Yeah.
So I am hoping that someone at the distribution center just said, oh, won't this be good?
Right, we'll mess with them a little bit.
Love it.
It always was strange to me when I was a kid, and I'll give you an example that is an obscure example, but I think you might know what I'm talking about. Do you remember the ice cream places that they used to have around here? They're long gone. They were called Zips. Zips Ice Cream, Z-I-P-Z, Zips Ice Cream. And their whole concept at Zips was they had a sundae bar where you could build your own sundae. You could get a cup, and then they had all, you know, like a dozen different kind of toppings.
And that's probably novel back when they were around, because I didn't know many places that had a sundae bar.
No one did anything like anything even close to that. You know, we had Tasty Freeze and Dairy Queen and places like that, but nobody had anything like what Zips had. All right, so during baseball season at Zips, you had the option, instead of having a cup to build your sundae into, you had a small baseball helmet. And they had stacks and stacks of White Sox helmets and stacks of Cubs helmets. But they also had, and I always thought this was kind of strange, being that this is Chicago, the home of two different baseball teams, they had about three or four Baltimore Orioles helmets and three or four Pittsburgh Pirates helmets. You name the team, there was always a small representation of those. And I remember at the beginning of every summer, I'd say to my friends, well, nobody's going to take that. It's, you know, it's a California Angels helmet. Does anyone here want that? And at the end of the summer, they still had all those helmets from other teams. There were one or two that were gone.
If they were on vacation, they might get it.
Then maybe. But I always wondered, like, were they forced to? Did somebody at corporate go, no, you got to have three of every team, except your hometown teams. You got to have dozens of those. Or did some owner go, no, I think this will be good for us. We'll sell a couple of Boston Red Sox helmets, I'm sure.
Well, someone claims, oh, no, that's not it. I was going to say there's one in Rogers Park.
Zips still?
Zips Ice Cream.
I think they're
Z-I-P
long gone.
Z-I-P apostrophe Z Ice Cream, 1635 West Howard.
Still now? Wow. If that's true, that's impressive, and I know where I'm going on my way home.
Because someone had written, does anyone remember Zips Ice Cream Shops? This is from Yahoo. .com. I believe they were a chain of make-your-own sundae places in New Jersey in the 70s. They were known for having the mini batting helmets that you could fill with ice cream.
That's what I mean, yeah. There was one in, the one we went to was in Tinley Park, but they were scattered kind of all over town. Not for long. They didn't last too long.
Yeah, but you can still get, I guess it's shaved ice or a snow cone if you're walking along the lakefront, like for Blues Fest and stuff, in those helmets.
Oh, do they have them there?
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember as a kid those helmets too, and I didn't know from Zips.
Well, somebody else, I want to say, well, maybe it was 7-Eleven had cups that also had the Cubs or the White Sox logo.
But not shaped like a helmet.
No, not shaped like a helmet. So I could see where getting your own team, that's always going to be good for business. But if you've got a business here in town, and back then if you had like a Montreal Expos helmet or a cup, you weren't going to get rid of that many of them, I wouldn't imagine.
No. Zips on Sibley, someone's saying.
Still now? They still have
it
now?
And then 734, we have the Blackhawks cups here at the Dunkin' Donuts stores around Brighton, Michigan, outside of Detroit, too. At least I'm a Blackhawks fan. Go Hawks. So there was a big shipment error.
I'm trying to think how far Brighton is, like if that's still close enough, closer to Chicago than it is to Detroit. I'm not positive where Brighton, Michigan is.
Well, still, why would they have it there?
And not a Red Wings. Right? You'd think a Red Wings cup would be a better move for them.
Someone should get a promotion over at the distribution center.
For spreading the Blackhawks word throughout the Midwest.
And then 262 says, sure, it was a mistake. The same thing happened when last year when Packers cups were accidentally shipped to Dunkin' Donuts in Minneapolis, St. Paul.
Oh, did that happen? I didn't know that.
Oh, we got to get that person.
That rivalry, by the way, is almost as serious, and some might say as serious, as the Bears-Packers rivalry. The Vikings and the Packers don't necessarily get along too well either.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Time to ship the coffee cups.
Right. That'll fix everything as soon as the coffee cups are shipped.
What a shame, though. They have such great coffee. If you go in there to get, you know, I would pick out a donut secondary to getting a cup of coffee.
Is that true? It's that good?
Yeah.
All right. We'll take a quick break. Steve will give you the news. We have a lot coming up. Some legal talk with our friend Rich Lankoff. Doc Emmerich comes by to give us a preview of tonight's Blackhawks and Blues game. And your chance to win a fantastic vacation over at Bailey's Harbor Yacht Club Resort. Stick around. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder at 720 WGN. And we have Rich Lankoff on the line because he is on an assignment somewhere in another country or city.
Just another city, right, Rich?
California. Might as well be another country out here, though. But, yeah, I'm a West Coast correspondent for Legal Faceoff today.
Very nice.
All right. Well, weird that you're out there because some news came over yesterday. The Manson family cult's youngest member, Leslie Van Houten, was tentatively approved for parole yesterday after having been rejected 19 times. Now, Van Houten is perhaps best known for scrawling bloody messages of revolution on the walls of that 1969 hideous murder of married couple Lino and Rosemary LaBianca. I'm not glorifying this case in any way, but I have to give Steve Railsback credit because he was the best Charles Manson
in that movie.
Oh, my God.
Movie. Yeah.
Wasn't he great?
He was good, yeah.
So she's been rejected 19 times. I know she's been a model citizen, but, you know, how bad can you be when you're in prison for 5 decades? How does this happen?
Even she doesn't agree that she agrees with you. She even said that she doesn't think that she should be out. She said, I don't let myself off the hook. She said, I don't find parts in any of this that makes me feel the slightest bit good of myself. So, yeah, I mean, fairly rare for someone to make it to a 20th parole hearing and get out. Usually those things are, you know, fairly routine, especially when you're involved in the type of crime that she was involved with. But, you know, there is some hope, I guess.
So, Rich, what happens in a case like this is she goes before a parole board, and then they judge her mental capacity and whether or not she's a harm to society. What are they seeing or hearing in her, in Leslie Van Houten, that they think she could be a valued member of society after her past record with the Mansons?
Yeah, I mean, you know, they obviously are looking at her record. They're looking at her, they're going to hear testimony from the employees of the prison. In this case, again, it seems from our reports that she's been a model prisoner. She is the editor of the prison newspaper. She's counseled fellow prisoners, so they might even talk to fellow prisoners. And they're going to look for remorse, right? They're going to see if she has exhibited remorse for her crimes, according to the report that she has done that. She said she was deeply ashamed for her role in these murders. They're going to look at the circumstances surrounding the crime. Obviously, in this case, you know, well-known, very heinous. She was 19 at the time when she joined the cult.
And she stabbed Rosemary LaBianca 14 times. I mean, I don't know. I just feel like that's something maybe, doesn't the governor or someone have to approve this, even though the parole board says, yes, she has been evaluated by all these psychiatrists and psychologists, and they said, yeah, she's eligible for parole at this point, but it's not a done deal, right?
Well, I mean, it is. I don't think the governor's involved, you know, just because it's a high-profile case doesn't mean that the governor has to approve it. You know, otherwise the governor would be involved in, you know, hundreds or thousands of these kind of hearings. So, yeah, I mean, they have a process, parole board. They meet regularly. And, you know.
She'd be the only one out because Manson.
Yeah, I mean, Manson's in, obviously. Manson, I think, is 81. And, you know, we see sometimes images or even video of his parole hearings. And, you know, probably not a good idea to show up for your parole hearing with a swastika gouged in your forehead. Probably not, you know, a great message to the parole board that you've rid yourself of your personal demons and are ready to enter back into society. But yeah, he's probably in for the haul. But yeah, she
by all accounts, again, is a model prisoner, so she's made it.
I'm remembering, and we're going back a couple of years on this, Rich, the man who shot at the Pope, Mohammed. I'm trying to remember what exactly his name is. I can look it up. But he was paroled back in 2010, and that's the guy who took a shot at the Pope, and they just thought at some point...
He'll be judged by someone bigger, though.
I guess so.
And the problem there is the Pope forgave him. If you remember, within days of getting shot, the Pope came out very publicly and forgave him. I mean,
right. Come
on, Pope, give him... I mean, let this guy rot for a little while. He shot at you.
It was Mohammed Ali Akka. They released him in 2010, and I remember thinking at the time, and still to this day, if you could do something that blatant, despite his being forgiven by the man he shot, the Pope, I think, boy, anyone could be released, kind of.
Yeah, well, like Wendy said, they answer to a higher authority.
Yeah, yeah. All right, so what happens now if she says, if Van Houten herself says, this isn't a great idea to release me, do they take that into account at all? Do they say, well, even she says she wouldn't be really good being on her own. What do they do there?
I think they take that into account, but remember, I mean, a couple of factors at play here is, you know, the overcrowding in the California penal system that is not just in California, but in most states. So the reason you have parole, or one of the reasons you have parole, aside from people rehabilitating themselves, is just a sheer space issue. They don't have the room to house the amounts of prisoners that are there. So her simply saying that, I think I want to stay in prison, is really not a huge factor. The second thing is, remember, you know, we've all, you know, seen this for people who watch Lock Up religiously like I do, or seen, you know, movies or read these stories. Prisoners become institutionalized, you know, the term we all remember from the Shawshank Redemption when, you know, I think Red is released and he wants to go back in. It's not uncommon for prisoners to, after a few years, especially 19 years, to become, you know, that's their home and they don't know anything else and they don't want to get out, even if they're paroled.
And I want to throw out another example. Lynette Fromm, who is also a member of the Manson family, Squeaky, to those of you who know and love her, Squeaky Fromm. She was also paroled a couple of years ago, and there was an attempt on the president's life with her too. So,
but she's still in.
No, she's out.
She is out.
She's out. Yeah. Reg, you still there?
Slowly but surely. You know, they're all. I mean, I think as you know, it's been a while. I think a lot of people. I mean, our generation probably remembers that fairly well. But you know, as time progresses, that story becomes less sensational than it was, obviously, when it occurred, and that plays into it as well.
I'm trying to remember if the other woman who shot at Gerald Ford, and that would be Sarah Jane Moore, I can't remember if she's still behind bars or if she has since been paroled, but it just seems like those are crimes. Being a Manson family member, shooting at a president, shooting at a Pope, you would think on paper that's going to get you a lifelong sentence. You're going to be in forever, but that's not the case. That's very disturbing.
Yeah, especially when you consider that, you know, like, for example, John Hinckley, you know, claimed that he had, you know, mental issues, and you know, that always plays into it as well. So, yeah, you would think that these crimes warrant lifetime sentences, but the reality of the penal system is that there's simply not enough resources and room for them. And obviously, it costs money, right? It's very expensive to feed and clothe and house these people for a long time, and you have to question the value to society of them remaining behind bars when they seemingly have rehabbed and they've paid their price to society versus just keeping them there simply because you want them to carry out their sentence. There's those competing interests.
More with Rich Lankov. We'll talk more law with Rich in just a little bit. Stay where you are. If you have any questions or comments, 312-981-7200. It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder on WGN. It's Bill Leff, and it's Wendy Snyder, and our guest is Rich Lankov. He can be heard here on Legal Face-Off. It's on WGN Plus. Is that correct, Rich?
Yes, it is. Every couple of weeks, we just taped our latest show today. A bunch of great guests. So yeah, it'll be ready later on today.
Very, very nice. Another case that we wanted to talk to you about, and this is such a sad, tragic case. This is Will Smith, not the actor Will Smith, the football player Will Smith, who played for the New Orleans Saints, who got into something of an altercation. This was Saturday night, I believe, right?
Yes.
Tell a little bit, for people who aren't familiar with the story, because he ended up getting killed in this horrible story. What happened with Will Smith?
So Will Smith, as you mentioned, Bill, is a former member of the New Orleans Saints. He was an All-Pro a couple of years, so spent his entire career with the Saints, a very beloved figure in New Orleans, was driving along with his wife. He was rear-ended by another car. He was rear-ended by a Hummer. He was driving, Will Smith was driving a Mercedes SUV. And from there, the story gets a little murky. What we know is that Will Smith was shot to death. We know that he was shot in the back. We know that he was shot by this other driver. What we don't know, and what really makes this an interesting case, is whether this was a road rage situation or whether this was a stand-your-ground self-defense situation. We all know stand-your-ground from the Kenyon case and the Trayvon Martin case in Florida.
Yeah.
So the shooter says that he was actually the victim, that when he ran into Will Smith, that Will Smith actually was the aggressor, that Will Smith had a gun, which has been confirmed, and that he was simply standing his ground and acting in self-defense in fear of his life. Will Smith's attorneys, and actually the prosecutor, has said that that's not the case, that this appears to be a road rage situation.
I saw some surveillance video that showed Smith's Mercedes actually rear-ended the Hummer at first. And what reports say is maybe he didn't, you know, it was no big deal, but he drove away. And then the Hummer, moments later, the vehicles are seen blocks away where the shooting occurred. So that was weird to me that Will Smith accidentally rear-ended this car.
Yeah.
And then sped off. So the Hummer went to follow him because it's like, hey, that dude just rear-ended me and drove off.
Right.
Yeah, you're right. There's that surveillance tape from earlier that does show what you said, that shows that Cordell Hayes, who's the shooter, was actually rear-ended by Will Smith. It's unclear how long before the shooting that happened, but yeah, it appears to be, you know, fairly close in time. So, right, was this a situation where Cordell Hayes was retaliating or even just trying to find out why Will Smith that and took off? You know, obviously not a reason to shoot someone, but it's unclear who the aggressor was. Now, you know, when you look at the fact that Will Smith was shot many times in the back, that is going to play an important role in deciding whether this was road rage or stand your ground. Cordell Hayes would answer, and his attorneys have already said that he shot him in the back because Will Smith was on the way to get his gun.
Which they did find a loaded gun in his car. And just now, USA Today is saying that a domestic abuse charge in a 2011, domestic abuse charge in 2011 against Will Smith can help bolster the legal argument that Cordell Hayes acted in self-defense when he shot and killed Smith Saturday night. Gray told USA Today, she is a professor, a Louisiana prosecutor, that the incident of violence could be used to argue Smith was the aggressor. So this domestic abuse charge from 2011 could enter into this.
But if Cordell Hayes is saying he did this in self-defense and it's stand your ground, and he, Will Smith, did not quite have the weapon in his hand yet, how would he know he was going back to the car to get a weapon? He's just guessing it's a weapon.
Yeah, there's a quote. There's a quote from a tape. The tape has an unnamed witness that says that he heard the words, get out of here, or I have a gun. And these are this is the whole quote. And he goes, F y'all, I got one too. And he grabs the gun and then he shoots him in the back. He's dead. So it's unclear who said the words, get out of here, or I have a gun. But you're right. I mean, that's exactly what ultimately a jury will have to decide, whether, you know, Will Smith turning his body, walking to his car, even if he did say, I have a gun, is that enough for stand your ground? Louisiana does have a stand your ground statute, but the critical question is, was the defendant, in this case Cordell Hayes, was he reasonably in fear of imminent serious bodily injury or death? If the answer is yes, then he was justified. If not, then no.
There were also some allegations that he, Will Smith, had been drinking prior to this. The people at the club he was at a club called the Saki Club. They say that there was no evidence of him being inebriated, but that plays into it to some extent too, doesn't it?
For sure. I mean, the condition that he was in, you know, if he came out inebriated, if he was the aggressor, that'll all play into it. And how about the fact, and this is the really weirdest part for me, how about the fact that he was at that restaurant with the police officer that was a defendant in the lawsuit that Cordell Hayes filed against the police department for shooting his father? I don't know if you follow that part.
Right. There was a wrongful death suit that Cordell filed and said, you know, hey, my father had some mental illness and was shot dead. So I did read that. So the police officer who was, or the prosecutor in that, is out having dinner. And then lo and behold, look, this guy.
He's there.
Yeah. It is kind of weird.
That's very strange. I mean, you know, you don't want to be a conspiracy theorist, but one theory would be that Cordell Hayes followed Will Smith, and maybe he thought that the cop that he sued that maybe was involved in the shooting of his father, maybe he thought he'd be in the Mercedes, and you know, and he wanted to kill him. So this was sort of a laying in wait situation, which is a first-degree murder situation. It's hard to believe that in a city like New Orleans, which I got to believe has about 1 million people, maybe a little less, that these two individuals just ran into each other randomly.
It does seem bizarre that that would be happening. And they did find, according to police, they found three weapons. Two of them, in Will Smith's car.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was just one, but the plot is thickening on this one.
Yeah, a lot of interesting legal theories, and there's also one more thing about that is Cordell Hayes, you know, he's been around the New Orleans scene for a while. He was a top 10 football prospect, you know, earlier in his life, and there was also a situation where he was thrown off the set of a football movie being filmed in New Orleans because he was acting violently there. So that'll also be introduced at his trial when it gets to that point.
Lots of twists and turns, Rich. Yeah. No question about it. We appreciate you spending time with us, and have a happy, safe stay there in Los Angeles.
Thanks. Thanks for having me on.
That's Rich Lankoff, one of the hosts of Legal Face Off, which can be heard right here on WGN Plus. We'll take a quick break. We've got news coming up next with Steve. Doc Emmerich will join us for a preview of the Hawks and the St. Louis Blues, and then your chance to win a fabulous vacation to Bailey's Harbor Yacht Club Resort. So stay where you are. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Give me the news. I got a bad case of loving you. No pills gonna cure my ill. I got a bad case of loving you.
Doctor, doctor, you can't call yourself doctor.
No, I'm not a doctor. I don't claim to be a doctor. And we should have changed the lyrics to Doctor, doctor, I've got a bad case of hating the Blues, because I think that's more accurate today. And hate's a strong word.
I hate him.
Dramatically dislike.
We have to find out why Doc Emmerich is called Doctor.
I don't know the answer to that.
I know his name is Mike.
Right.
And we are waiting for him to get on the line.
Mike's spelled backwards, actually. It's pronounced Doctor in some languages.
Oh, it is?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that, Steve.
See, now I don't know when to believe people. I actually have to do a double take or a double thought with you and with Bertrand.
Right. You're going to get whiplash.
Game two tonight, St. Louis. Duncan Keith is back. I'm very excited about this, sporting my Duncan Keith sweater. Mm-hmm. All right,
who told you to get the Duncan Keith sweater?
Well, see, that was the thing. I didn't know. You know, when you get a Hawk sweater, you invest a lot of bit of money. So you don't know who to get. And I love Patrick Kane, and he is the top player in the U.S., mm-hmm. most number of points. Mm-hmm. But I didn't know what to get. And this guy on the line, Doc Emmerich, said, why don't you go with Duncan Keith? And I did, and I'm wearing it right now, ready for tonight's game, Doc.
Oh, you are. It sounds like you're cranked up for that. So as we envision you there on Michigan Avenue, inside the glass, you have your red number two on.
I do, with the A. And the A stands for alternate in his case. In my case, maybe something different.
Yes. Yes. And, Doc, you told me to get a Dennis Hull jersey.
Authority, thank you. You told Bill to get a
Dennis Hull jersey, which I'm wearing proudly. Thank you for that, Doc.
Very good. You guys are having a great time. And the weekend is ahead and lots of hockey coming up. You'll have this, plus you'll have Sunday afternoon, so plenty of good Hawks Blues to watch.
That was quite a game, Game 1. It was really one of those games that could have gone either way. How strange was it to end on a kind of a fluke goal, though, huh?
It does tend to happen in Stanley Cup playoffs, and usually it doesn't wind up being the captain of either team that scores a goal like that. It does happen with the Hawks a little more because Jonathan Toews seems to have this ability, but bank shot goals and weird sorts of things do. They are a part of the hockey gods who have missing teeth and flowing robes and a weird sense of humor, and we get these goals every once in a while. We don't have very many games that go into Stanley Cup overtime at nothing-nothing. And you can say that that was a tribute to Brian Elliott, but I think it was also there was a little bit of luck involved in that the Blackhawks had a lot of opportunities. And normally when the puck's on Captain Sirius' stick, it usually winds up, if you give him two chances, one of the two is going to go in, and neither of those did the other night.
Right.
So it's why they play best of seven, and it'll be a lot of fun watching this. I'm out in Pittsburgh right now for the game tomorrow with Pittsburgh and the Rangers, but I'll be watching just like the rest of you tonight. And out here we get the NBCSN, which will be Pat and Edzo. So that'll be fun, too, and you'll have John and Troy, as always, on the station there.
Now, you're a fan of the Pittsburgh Pirates, aren't you?
Yes, and I'm paying for it right now. We won the first four, and yesterday I went, because it was an afternoon game, and I do not want to forget my day job, which is watching hockey games at night and making sure I'm up to date on things. But, yeah, I went over yesterday afternoon, and it was a disappointment. As everybody loses 50, and everybody wins 50, and it's the games in between that you worry about, I guess. But yesterday was one of those 50.
Now, you went to a Pirates fantasy camp. I didn't realize this. You played second base when you were at the fantasy camp?
I played second base, and I played second base in high school, Wendy, and there was almost a half a century in between. And there was almost a half a century of not playing second base anywhere for anybody in between. But they tolerate an awful lot at fantasy camp, and if there's anyone, and that includes females, because the Pirates fantasy camp did have three female players that really love playing baseball, and they were out there, and they were chosen by teams as well. They were good souls, but yeah, it was a week of playing games, and for most of us, a week in the infirmary.
So
I wound up having to have my knee drained once.
Oh no, that's not good. Well, Doc, if you're a Pirates fan and you like second base, then your guy would either be Bill Mazeroski or Rennie Stennett, right? Would that be your...
Yeah, I wore number 9 because I'm old. I was a Maz guy.
Yeah.
And the one quick story about that knee draining was that I had to go to somebody, you know, that wasn't on the training staff to have it done because they had not gotten down for the start of the regular training camp yet. And the guy drained my knee and he said, "I gave you a little shot of steroid, and that should help you." And I went back and got 5 straight hits. My batting average went from the 200s to the 400s by the end of the week. And Kent Tekulve, who is the commissioner and that hero of the 1979 World Series, says, "We're probably going to have to put an asterisk next to that batting average."
And it could cost you the Hall of Fame, too. I hope you're aware of that, Doc.
Yeah, it's shot.
Yeah.
It was shot a long time ago.
All right. Well, so you played baseball in high school and in fantasy camp, in 2012. Did you ever play hockey?
No. I never learned to skate. I grew up in Indiana as much as I grew, and we didn't have rinks there, and we didn't have hockey programs. And there it was basketball. And through my freshman year of high school, because I was in a small town of only 600 people, I was able to play because there weren't many kids. But when they realized the legs weren't going to grow, I wound up being the public address announcer, and that turned out to be a better thing for me to spend my time on than trying to shoot foul shots being nearsighted with glasses.
Well, you still made it in the U.S. Hockey Hall of Fame as the first ever broadcaster inducted into it, so congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah, that was a great night, and it was right there in Chicago, so a lot of memories. You know, when you work in any line of work, you are around one group of people that you work with, and another group that you grew up with and married into in your family, and rarely are they ever in the same room at the same time. But that night they were, and that's what makes it a lifetime memory, is the people you work with are at one table, and right next to them are all your family. It's just great.
Doc, we who do not call hockey games marvel at the ability the game is so fast, not just the game on the ice, but the mental game of knowing who's on the ice at any given time, of knowing which numbers coordinate to which players. I'm astounded at what you do, and you do it so poetically night after night after night. Does it even get to you? Do you go, wow, I'm in it. I'm the guy doing it. I can't believe what I'm pulling off.
No, it does. It's not that way, Bill, necessarily, but you do get challenges, and one of the most recent ones was Game 1 in St. Louis. Oftentimes, when you're doing the national broadcast, they give you the low position. But in the first round, and for good reason, we're not exclusive, and so we wound up high at the same place that Pat and Eddie were doing the game, as well as Troy and John were just down from us, too.
Mm-hmm.
And there, it is a higher location than at United Center. And you are, as I think I mentioned to you one other time, you are working for a 4-inch number on the sleeve.
Yeah.
And from that distance and from that height, it becomes a challenge sometimes to be able to read those numbers. And that was the reason I know in one earlier conversation I talked about 91 and 81 being Richards last year and 81 being Hossa. And me being very glad that Brad is happy in Detroit because it made calling that right winger with a left-hand shot much easier. And there was a challenge with that, I think, in St. Louis just because the numbers are very small from that height. But United Center, the lighting is very bright, and the Blackhawks jerseys, especially that red one like Wendy's got on,
yeah,
the numbers really stand out well for you. And white against red is really solid.
Yeah,
it is.
But
pretty
if you have a blue one against a white jersey or white against blue, it's a little harder.
All right, and speaking of the jersey I'm wearing, Dunks is back tonight. 6-game suspension finished. He is back in action. Are we going to see an amped up yet well-behaved Duncan Keith tonight?
Yeah, I think so. First of all, he is probably the greatest guy at understanding the need for control. He has exercised it before. He's had 3 of these, but his career has been very long. There is separation between each of the suspensions that he's had. So he has rehabbed very well. I wish I had the good fortune with speeding tickets that Duncan Keith has had with suspensions. I sometimes stack them up. I get 2 in a row. I don't think Dunk's going to get 2 suspensions in a row. They count on him a lot, and he knows that, and he will make a difference. The Blues got the game they absolutely had to have because he wasn't in the lineup. It could have gone either way. It was more likely to go the Blackhawks' way because they had far the better chances. They had more shot attempts. And Ken Hitchcock, the coach of St. Louis, has said that the hit total needs to climb. And as you know, and it's probably been reported there, Joel Quenneville has responded by saying, good, I hope it gets up near 70 instead of 41 like it was in Game 1, because that means we have the puck. If you do the hitting, that means you don't have it and you're trying to get it back. These two teams are created altogether differently. One is built for size. They've got, you know, if our average is 6'1", 201, that's our average size in the league. The Blues have 15 guys that are greater than that.
Wow.
But the Blackhawks are, as you know, are speed merchants, skillful guys that have gone a long time in a lot of playoffs, and so they have the credentials. The Blues are trying to earn theirs. And as Hank Stram used to say when I got the chance to do 5 NFL games with Hank Stram, that's the reason they blow up the footballs and screw on the helmets. We'll see.
We're talking to the great Doc Emmerich. Doc, I've heard on several hockey websites that maybe Coach Hitchcock of the St. Louis Blues is playing for his future with the St. Louis Blues, that if they don't win at least this first round and maybe even go deeper, he may not be the coach of the St. Louis Blues anymore. Do you find any truth to that?
Well, he's on a 1-year contract, and they actually did some interviewing last summer before they brought him back for a 1-year contract. So I think we can draw our own conclusions from that his situation was shaky at best with that year.
Yeah.
Now, how did they weigh that at the end of this year? Certainly winning a round in the playoffs from the defending champions makes a tremendous mark. They had a wonderful year despite everything else, and he may be a finalist for Coach of the Year because of what they accomplished with so many injuries, almost 300 man games. But hovering over all of it was that fact from last spring, and also the fact that all of the greatness that you do in the regular season vanishes into thin air and is hardly ever remembered if you don't do something good in the playoffs.
Yeah, true.
The Blackhawks have, and for the last 3 years, the Blues have not. And so the jury is not only out, it has ordered sandwich.
Excellent. And we started before we had you on the line, and we know you don't have a lot of time. Where did you get the nickname Doc?
It was one of those things that wound up being earned, I guess. I got a doctorate in broadcasting at Bowling Green, and it became the automatic nickname, as I guess it does for anyone in the medical profession, but mine was in radio, TV, and film, and so I never use it much myself. I never call myself that, and I certainly don't use it on any airline boarding passes, because I figure if there's a problem and they need help, all I'll be able to do is read to somebody.
That's great.
Yeah, but you could probably make them better just by reading to them, Doc.
Well, you'll calm them down.
I don't know. It depends on the reading material. And what I have in front of me now are the stats from the last Rangers-Pittsburgh game, and it's kind of boring.
Oh, that's no good. And the lovely Mrs. Emmerich also does not refer to you as Doc, does she?
No, she calls me Mike. We go back way before the doc year. She has waded through an awful lot of things with me, including finishing graduate school, cancer, and all kinds of the loss of both parents and the loss of both her parents. And you go through a lot of things over 38 years of time. She's a godsend, and she packs my lunch and sends me out to play with the other kids in the fall, and it's always very encouraging.
Does she send you little pictures of your puppy dogs when you're away?
I get pooch reports every day, and they're occasionally texts as to who did what and who barked at the mailman. And they're great little souls. They're fun to watch, and we all look forward to being reunited, more so at the end of playoffs, because it winds up being for more days in a row than just one or two. But the job is wonderful, and I do dearly love it, and she knows that. And she also knows that the times at home are among the best that we ever had.
Oh, that's perfect. Doc, it's always a pleasure to talk to you, and you make every game so much more fun to listen to. So keep up the great work.
It's fun to get in free, as I've said so many times, you two. And I hope every once in a while the two of you can get in free to see a game as well. And when you do, make sure you make your voices known. Get out there and yell for those Hawks.
Well, be listening for me yelling for the Hawks on Sunday night.
Okay, yeah, you yell loud.
Oh, you'll hear me. Trust me.
You will hear her. Doc, thank
okay,
you.
Be good.
All right, have a safe trip. It's Doc Emmerich,
thank
everybody.
You.
One of the best. One of the absolute best.
Isn't he like the greatest man to walk this earth?
Yeah.
He's one of the.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm not kidding. He's so nice.
Fan.
He's so good.
Yeah, well, Steve will tell you. Steve's been friends with him for years. He knows. All right, let's take a quick break. More show coming your way next. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. You know, I put Doc Emmerich, there's this pantheon of announcers, and anyone who's doing this professionally has to be good. You can't call a major league team, a major league sport, if you don't know what you're doing. But there's guys like Doc Emmerich, like Vin Scully, who are just, even among the best of the best, they just shine, you know? And every time I've ever heard a game from him, it's enjoyable to watch a hockey game, but the way he calls it, and I'm going to use Vin Scully again as an example. I don't know if you've had a chance to hear
yes.
him much do Dodger games. Boy, is he good.
But I get like hypnotized when I'm listening to Doc talk, even on the phone with us.
Do you? Yeah.
It's just the mellifluous tones, right. The wonderful vocabulary.
Right.
It's just so smooth as silk.
And this is the funniest thing about him. He is such a gentle human being. He is. And then when they did this piece on him on HBO on Real Sports.
I have not yet seen that. I got to get that.
They asked him about the fighting. And as the question comes up, you know, they said, what do you think about the fighting in hockey? And I'm like, well, Doc is a very gentle human being. He doesn't want to see hockey players hitting each other. He said, no, I wish there was more fighting. I enjoy the fighting. I like the fighting a lot.
I still don't understand the fighting because sometimes they let him go for a little bit. Sometimes they break it up immediately.
Right.
It varies. Why does it vary so much?
The part about, I don't know why it varies so much, but the part that baffles me, and you see this a couple of times a week with a hockey team, is you'll see two guys start punching each other, and then you realize if they land a punch, you're going to be punching a very hard plastic helmet. It's not like you're going to be hitting skin. You're going to break your hand if you land a punch properly.
Yeah, but a lot of times even the helmets come off and they continue to let them fight. Do they let them fight until they hit the ice? Is that the rule? Because it
seems
willy-nilly.
Very right.
And I hate when willy and nilly fight.
Those guys should not fight. They should get along better. You're right.
Hey, big news. Listeners, stand by. We'll tell you when to call in and how, because you may have to work for it again. We have a two-night stay in a one-bedroom courtyard suite at the Bailey's Harbor Yacht Club Resort in Door County, Wisconsin. Scenic views, serene beauty on the shores of Lake Michigan. We'll tell you how you can win and what you have to do to win coming up next, 720 WGN. Happy Friday to everybody. It's gorgeous out there. As you heard Steve report, it's going to be a fantastic weekend. Go out and enjoy the sunshine, won't
you? Why wouldn't you?
Do you run at all?
Yes, I do.
Like you'll go out jogging?
Yeah.
You do?
Well, I run on a treadmill.
That's not going outside and jogging.
I have run outside. I just choose. I like it better when there's a television in front of me and I can watch
the dangling
something.
Carrot.
Yeah.
Well, it looks like running has gone back way to the ages because archaeologists have found human remains that are 1,500 years old. They found it in Mongolia.
Yeah.
And apparently. People like to go running because they had they found a mummy and the feet of the remains were wrapped in such a way that resembled modern looking sneakers.
Seriously? Huh.
Social media and message boards were abuzz about the Adidas wearing mummy with the three stripes on the sides.
Yeah.
Maybe time travel is not a myth, some people wrote. Did the doctor lose one of his companions in the past, wrote one person on Twitter. That's not funny. Oh, referencing Doctor Who.
Yeah. I didn't get the reference either. I watched Doctor Who.
I don't either.
The reference was lost on me.
You know, that mummy that's been found wearing Adidas, it isn't. I count four stripes anyway, so K-Swiss at best. Another tweeter user cracked. See, I would have pictured that Nike was the first original shoe.
Yeah. That would make some sense.
I want my mummies with a swoosh.
That seems more fitting of the mummy. So they, I'm confused on something. Were they using these? Are they insinuating that back then, all those years ago, that people were running, or is it just the type of footwear, or did they? Why do they have these on? I'm
confused. Some people say that it was just a fashion thing because there are a lot of people that do not run yet wear Adidas.
Oh, right.
As I like to affectionately call them.
Adidas to the rest of us.
Yes.
Although when you were in school, was there a debate, because it's when the Nike brand was first starting to make a name for themselves back when we were in school. This would have been late 70s, early 80s. And some people called them Nikes. I hope you'll remember this, but it's true. Other people referred to them as Nikes because nobody knew
we
if it was.
We didn't know.
We didn't know back then. So you had half the kids going, are those Nikes? Those are great. Those Nikes shoes are great. And then the other kids would say, no, it's Nike, believe me.
I know, we did do that. But I do believe that Adidas was before that.
Adidas preceded Nike as a big-time national brand.
Yes.
I know that for sure.
In 1925, in a small German village, the world got its first taste of Adidas. It was there in a village by the name of Herzogenaurach.
How do you say that again?
Herzogenaurach.
That's better. That sounds, the first time didn't sound right, but that time sounded right.
It's located 12 miles to the north and west of Nuremberg.
Yeah.
And those simple three stripes were brought to life by Adidas founder Adolf Adi Dassler. So Adidas.
Is that where that comes from?
I
didn't know that.
And so this discovery of this mummy that dates back to 1,500 years old in Mongolia is being praised as the first complete Turkic burial found in Central Asia. According to a museum researcher, I can't pronounce his name, but he said it's a very rare phenomenon. Phenomenon. This finds shows us the beliefs and rituals of Turkics. In addition to human remains, archaeologists found a saddle.
Yeah.
A clay vase.
Yeah.
A wooden bowl. The remains of an entire horse and other items.
Wow. How about that? Along with the running shoes, did he also have a Fitbit, like a real primitive form of Fitbit? With like Roman numerals and like regular numbers on it.
Yes, they found it on his wrist. But yeah, the feet were bound and wrapped in such a way that they resembled modern looking sneakers.
How about that? And that's from a long, 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 long time ago.
Yes, it was.
All right, here's the game plan, everybody. We have a fantastic trip. We gave one of these away last week. People loved it. A lot of people wished so badly they had won. We can only have one winner. Here's another chance for you to win an incredible trip in just moments to Bailey's Harbor Yacht Club Resort.
It's a two-night stay in a one-bedroom courtyard suite at the Bailey's Harbor Yacht Club. It's in Door County, Wisconsin. You can enjoy scenic views and serene beauty on the shores of Lake Michigan. Amenities include indoor and outdoor pool, whirlpool and sauna, and Door County activities within minutes away from Bailey's Harbor Yacht Club Resort. Open year-round, you can book your getaway by calling 800-927-2492. You can also visit them online at bhyc.com. Or you can call us right now at 312-981-7200.
Can we have Kevin clear the lines? Because I want to give everybody a fair chance at this, and some people called just a little bit prematurely.
I feel you, bro.
So clear the lines, Kevin, as we say in the business. Clear the lines, and then call us right now at 312-981-7200. Two of you will square off. One of you will walk away with a fantastic trip to Bailey's Harbor Yacht Club Resort.
Today's the 15th. It's the old tax day.
Yeah.
So shall we take the first caller and the fifth caller?
Yes.
312-981-7200. Will they go up against each other head-to-head, as they say in the business?
Yes.
First caller and fifth caller, 312-981-7200. And then our Friday fun day continues. Yep. Here on 720 WGN.
Yeah, we have put together a little game. It's the Tax Day game. That's what we're calling it, the Tax Day game. The winner of this game is going to win a fantastic prize, a beautiful stay over at the Bailey's Harbor Yacht Club Resort in Wisconsin. You
two nights stay.
It. Yep.
One bedroom courtyard suite.
Yep.
How about that? Shall we meet our contestants?
Let's meet them.
Since it is Tax Day, the 15th, where we were looking for callers 1 and 5, and let's say hello to caller 1 right now. This is Tasha. How are you, Tasha?
Good. How are you guys?
Very good. Tasha, tell us just a little bit about yourself so that the listeners can either root for you or against you.
I am 27 years old. I am a single mother of an 8-year-old daughter.
Mm-hmm.
I live in Fox Lake.
Mm-hmm.
And you're ready to play.
I am.
You want to meet your contestant?
Sure.
We are going to introduce you to Carol, who's calling from Elgin. Hi, Carol.
Hi there.
Carol, tell us a little bit. First of all, congratulations. It's down to you and Tasha. One of you will win this fabulous prize. Tell us a little bit about you, if you wouldn't mind, Carol.
Well, I'm a senior citizen, and I have 3 children, 5 grandchildren, and I love listening to you guys.
Oh, that's very nice of you.
So far, Carol's winning.
Well,
kidding, Tasha. All right, here's how it works.
I agree.
Bill will explain it to you, but I would presume that they need to use their buzzers.
Yeah, when you know the answer to the question, and there will be 10 questions, buzz in by saying your name. Tasha, you'll buzz in with the word Tasha, your name. Carol, when you know an answer, buzz in by saying Carol. There are 10 questions. They get progressively harder. The first question is worth 100 points. It's relatively easy. Question 2 is worth 200 points, and so on down the line to 1,000. Whoever has the most points at the end of the 10 questions, of course, will win. The judges will make any final decisions on if we hear a tie with your names. Do either of you have any questions?
No.
All right. Should we try out their buzzers just to make sure?
Yeah, try them out. Tasha, if you knew the answer to the question, how would that buzzer sound?
Tasha.
Very, very good. And Carol, the same for you. If you know the answer, how will your buzzer sound?
Carol.
Very, very good. All right, let me explain the game. The game is the Tax Day game. Today is April 15th, always known as Tax Day. Now, today, don't worry, you have a couple of extra days. Your taxes aren't actually due until the 18th, but it is still Tax Day. So today, all the answers in today's quiz rhyme with the word Tax Day. Every answer will rhyme with the word Tax Day. Wendy, I'm going to give you a sample question. This isn't for you, Tasha or Carol. This is just how the game works. If I were to say this clue to you, this day pays tribute to an all but outdated method of sending an instant message, what would your answer be?
Fax Day.
Fax Day is absolutely right.
All right, who's on the wireless phone? Would that be you, Carol?
Probably.
Because we're getting a lot of background noise here, and that's not fair to Tasha.
Okay.
Can you pull over anywhere?
I'm going to shut all the windows.
Shut all your windows.
Put the smoke out.
Close your doors.
Close the windows.
Check your carburetor.
I hope.
Is that better? And you're pulled over to the side? All right.
Yeah.
That's what they have you do on the network game shows too, Wendy. They ask that you please pull over to the side when playing on the game. All right.
Tasha, are you still with us? Because Carol's getting all our attention right now.
Yes, I am.
All right. Good.
10 questions. The first one worth 100 points. They will get progressively harder. Again, the key thing you need to remember is that every answer rhymes with Tax Day. Here goes. Question number 1. It's worth 100 points. On this day, we honor a discount clothing store, chief competitor, but also owned by Marshalls.
Colleen.
Awesome. Wait, hang on.
Hold on. I heard a lot
I
at
heard
one time.
Colleen.
I did hear Colleen's name.
There is no Colleen playing.
That's my daughter. I'm sorry.
Oh, no. Colleen is not eligible.
Then I say it goes to Tasha.
I did hear Tasha after Colleen. Tasha, it's up to you. What is the answer to question number one?
TJ Maxx.
Give me the whole answer. It has to rhyme with tax day.
TJ Maxx Day?
Absolutely right. TJ Maxx Day. Tasha, you're up 100 to nothing. Again, Colleen, not eligible, but it's up to Tasha and Carol for question two worth 200 points. Remember,
sorry.
Again, every answer will rhyme with tax day. Here's question two worth 200 points. This day is set aside to pay tribute to doctors who are not very good and the noises that ducks make.
Quack, Carol.
Carol.
Tax day.
What is it, Carol?
Quack day.
Quack day is right,
Quack
Carol.
Day.
You're in first place.
Carol, you will be disqualified if you yell out the answer before your buzzer.
You
got
to yell your name out.
And
right?
No more Colleen.
Sorry. Sorry.
Carol's got 200. Tasha at 100. Colleen still scoreless. Question
She's
three.
Still in my
backseat. That's all right. Don't you worry. Question three is worth 300 points. Very close so far. Here goes. National League baseball fans look forward to this day, most notably those in Arizona who like snakes.
Wendy.
Wendy, you can't. You and Colleen are ineligible.
Kevin?
Kevin, you are also ineligible.
Dang.
Nobody
Colleen.
Getting this one. No, I can't give it to Colleen. Wendy, you know the answer to this.
Diamondbacks Day.
Diamondbacks Day, right. But nobody got that one. Don't worry. Plenty more questions. Carol at 200. Tasha at 100. Question four is worth 400 points. Don't forget, they all rhyme with tax day. Here goes. Finally, a day in which we honor the comedic actor who starred in School of Rock and Kung Fu Panda.
Tasha.
Tasha?
Jack Black's Day?
Absolutely right, Jack Black's Day. Tasha, you've taken a commanding lead, 500 to Carol's 200. But Carol, don't worry, one more correct answer puts you back in the lead. 500 to 200. Question five is worth 500 points. Again, they all rhyme with tax day. Here goes. This day could be a commemoration of unsightly dental enamel buildup or a wall-mounted declaration of excellence. Carol, you were first.
Go,
Carol.
Plax Day is right, Carol. You're back in the lead with 700 to Tasha's 500. We're midway through. Question six is worth 600 points. Here goes. This day pays tribute to the Los Angeles-based rock group whose biggest hit was My Sharona.
Wendy.
Nothing for Tasha or Carol. Wendy, go ahead.
You sure, girls?
No, I'm not sure.
Wendy, who is it?
Me neither.
The next day.
The next day is absolutely right. The
I
next
win.
Day. No, you can't win.
Oh.
You cannot win. Carol, you have 700. Tasha, you have 500. There are four questions left. Question seven worth 700 points. Here goes. This day is set aside to ponder the global investment firm first founded in 1869 that was dubbed Too Big to Fail.
Oh.
I told you, they get harder every time.
Wow.
This is a tough one. Nothing from you, Tasha or Carol?
Oh, I can't think. No.
No, it was Goldman Sachs Day.
Oh,
Goldman Sachs
tricky.
Day. Don't worry. Three left. Carol, you're still holding a very tight lead, 700 to Tasha's 500. Question eight, there's only three questions left, is worth 800 points. Here goes. It's on this day that we salute an all-purpose household cleanser, Colgate-Palmolive's answer to
Tasha.
Mr. Clean. Tasha?
No.
Tasha, you were first.
Tasha? Tasha?
What is it, Tasha?
Ajax Day?
Ajax Day is right. You're at 1,300. Carol, you're at 700. Carol, don't worry, though. Either of these next two could give you the lead. There's two questions left. 1,300 for you, Tasha. 700 for you, Carol. Question nine, worth 900 points. Here goes. On this date, we honor Jive Radio DJs, but more importantly, the slang term for the records that they spin.
Wendy.
Wendy, hold on. Nothing from Tasha or Carol? No. Wendy, go ahead.
Well, it could be either. Stacks of Wax Day?
It is Stacks of Wax Day. What else could it be?
Well, I was going to say, is it Stacks? Is it Wax?
Stacks of Wax Day. There is one question left. Tasha, currently, you're our leader at 1,300 points. Carol, you trail at 700. However, if one of you get this one right, You are the winner. If neither of you get it, Tasha wins, but whoever gets this right is the winner. Question 10, worth 1,000 points. Here goes. Despite being a very, very sad day, you will have joy, you will have fun, you will have seasons in the sun on this day.
What do you...
When are you going to have a heart attack?
I know.
Tasha, nothing. Carol, nothing.
No.
Wendy,
no.
Joy, you'll have fun. You'll have season in the sun because?
It's Terry Jacks Day.
Terry Jacks Day, the singer of that song. Tasha, that means by virtue of nobody getting that right, you're our winner with 1,300 points to Carol's 700. A tight game, though, for both of you. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you. Thank you, Carol.
It was fun.
All right, Carol, hang on. We're going to set you up with a Lou Malnati's gift certificate, all right?
Wonderful. Thank you.
All right, Lou Malnati's gift certificate. Lou Malnati's is the home of Chicago's best deep dish pizza. Find one of their 40-plus Chicagoland locations or order online at loumalnatis.com. And Tasha, you have scored a two-night stay in a one-bedroom courtyard suite at the Bailey's Harbor Yacht Club Resort in Door County, Wisconsin.
That's awesome. Thank you so much.
You're welcome so much, Tasha. Congrats. Stay on the line.
Okay. They're both on hold.
I didn't give Colleen a present. I felt bad.
Oh.
Should we have given her something?
No. Carol can share her pizza
with
Colleen.
Yeah, she'll share. Right. That, you can share that. Sure.
But how about this? A two-night stay, one-bedroom courtyard suite, Bailey's Harbor Yacht Club Resort in Door County, Wisconsin. You can enjoy scenic views, serene beauty on the shores of Lake Michigan, all the amenities including indoor and outdoor pool, whirlpool, sauna, and Door County activities within minutes away from Bailey's Harbor. Open year-round, you can book your getaway by calling 800-927-2492 or go online at BHYC.com. You are so good at this.
Oh, come on. That's fun. All right, we'll take a quick break, and then we'll find out what Ro and Anna have coming up next. It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder on WGN.